From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Poet's Word is getting on terms. Chris Lotion on the far side. Poet's Word on the near side. They're practically together now. They fight tooth and nail up to the line. And Poet's Word is edging ahead and won it. Poet's Word won the King George.
Starship Jubilee has gone right to the front. Involuntary coming up to second. And on the outside late is Stormy Victoria. But Eureka Rosa da Silva is romping away with the Nassau Stakes. And Starship Jubilee will score by about three lengths.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They come for home. Gabriel Charles Extreme outside. Suddenly, Midnight Storm did not go on. And it's Gabriel Charles just sweeping right on by 2020 Vision. But Gabriel Charles in a dominating performance. Gabriel Charles and Mike Smith romping home in the Eddie Reed.
Songbird has repelled Karina Mia. Songbird has opened up a three-length lead. Karina Mia has been left behind. Songbird has whistled past the graveyard of champions, winning the Coaching Club American Oaks.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched a network. This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you in the starting gate with me again this morning for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time. There are a total of 13 stakes races set to be run throughout North America later today. Eight of those will be contested at three tracks, Saratoga, Del Mar, and Pimlico. Of those 13 stakes, six are graded. Five of the six graded stakes are going to be held at Saratoga, Del Mar, and Pimlico. So if you can't tell, the eyes of the racing world are on those three tracks, at least here in the United States. The lone exception here in North America is the Grade 2 Nassau, the lone exception of the graded stakes. And the Nassau is going to be held north of the border at Woodbine. That's a good race, too. Which, by the way, did you catch the news coming out of Canada yesterday? Great news for all horsemen here in the States. Starting Monday, August 9th, Canada is going to reopen its border and allow U.S. horsemen, owners, trainers, jockeys, to return to Woodbine. And that is huge. And it's just when the meet of their thoroughbred racing season is set to get underway in August and September. Things really start to heat up as you make your way toward the Queen's Plate, toward those Breeders' Cup Challenge races later this summer and into the early fall. Great news there. And if you turned on your radio this morning or you clicked on the Listen Live button at the top of our homepage, horseracingradio.net, to listen on your mobile device or your computer, whatever it might be, you're probably hoping to hear a conversation pertaining to the eight stakes races at Saratoga, Del Mar, and Pimlico later today. Well, you made the right call, because how about this? Coming up at 8:35 Eastern, I'm going to be joined by Tom Law of the Saratoga Special and ThisIsHorseRacing.com to preview today's 11 race card at the Spa. It's a good one up there in upstate New York. It's a card that includes two graded stakes, the Grade 1 Coaching Club American Oaks and the Grade 3 Caress Stakes. And I will say, I've seen better wagering events than today's Coaching Club American Oaks, but if you're someone who watches racing simply for the star power it can offer, you won't care about that four-horse field later today. Undefeated Kentucky Oaks heroine Malathat returns to action, and she does it as the overwhelming 2-5 morning line favorite for Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher under Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez. Always, always a potent combination. Clairiere and Maracuja are second and third choices respectively in that race, and look, they're really nice fillies. But Malathat has made both of them look ordinary earlier this season. Now, keep in mind, this is, when we talk about Saratoga, the graveyard of champions, the graveyard of favorites. We say it every single year. And it's true. It happens a lot. Horses that are highly regarded and heavy favorites get beat unexpectedly. Now, it happens at other tracks, too, but it seems as if it happens in big races at Saratoga a little bit more. At least that's the mystique that has always surrounded Saratoga. But Ed DeRosa, our good friend from Briss, Twin Spires, and our Thursday night BrissNet.com call-in show here on the network, sent out a very interesting tweet yesterday. And he pointed out that if you had bet every favorite this month at Saratoga, you would be up for the meeting. The 40% strike rate is the highest since 2003. And the first time since 2014, it's even above 36% in July. First time since 2014. Really incredible stuff from Ed. That's great research. Good news for fans of Malathat, but it really might not matter. She just might be that good. She might not need that historical trend on her side, but it doesn't hurt. Last Saturday morning, my poll question on this show asked you who the best three-year-old in the country is as we begin the second half of the season. Not surprisingly, Essential Quality was a runaway winner. But one listener replied, and I thought this was interesting, replied and said, the best three-year-old in the country right now is the filly Malathat. I don't know if it's even a remote possibility, but what great theater it would create if Malathat and Essential Quality were to meet in the Traverse Stakes later this summer. How cool would that be? I'm going to bounce that off Tom Law when he joins me coming up in about 30 minutes. I'll pose that question to him, and we'll see if there is any chance that that could occur. If there's any rumblings going around Saratoga Springs, New York. You know, a lot of times you'll hear things on the backside. Who knows? We'll see. Pimlico has four stakes races on their Saturday program, highlighted by the Grade 3 Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup. Now, that's a race, if you're not familiar with it, go back and look up the history. It's an unbelievable history. It's not what it once was now, but the folks at the Maryland Jockey Club are hoping to see it get back there one day. Pimlico analyst Naomi Tucker is going to be with me at 9:40 Eastern to preview their big day. It's a pretty good 11-race card where the turf meets the surf later today as well. A pair of Grade 2 races highlighted by the Eddie Reed and the San Clemente are part of the Del Mar card on this Saturday afternoon. Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela sends out the defending champion United in the Eddie Reed and then turns his attention to 12-1 morning line long shot Pizzazz in the San Clemente, and he's going to be with me in the final segment of today's show at 10:40 Eastern as I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. And who better than the 9-time Breeders' Cup winning Hall of Famer to round out today's show? United, by the way, looking to become the fifth horse to win multiple renewals of the Eddie Reed and the first horse to do it since Acclamation pulled off the double in 2011 and 2012. And if all of that great racing conversation isn't enough to get you excited here this morning, I'm going to welcome in Owner View's Gary Falter at 8:15 Eastern and PDJF President Nancy LaSala at 9 o'clock. Both with some exciting news that you are not going to want to miss. Good stuff coming out of both organizations, Owner View and PDJF. This week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, comes your way at 9:20. I will recognize and welcome to the program Leslie Janica, who has done amazing work in our sport for a very long time as the coordinator of KEMI, the Kentucky Equine Management Internship. She will be this week's unsung hero, and deservedly so. At 10 o'clock, it's this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy as he sits down for a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Saratoga's leading rider, Luis Saez, and his agent, Kira McLaughlin. He caught up with both of them in the room at Saratoga. Plus, Kurt Becker's popular Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. That comes your way at 10:20 Eastern. So it is a loaded show. Every segment full of great content for you here this morning. And, by the way, have a poll question for you. Almost forgot to throw out the poll question. All right, so here's the poll question. Since you are going to hear from one of the greatest trainers in the history of the sport, Richard Mandela, and you're going to hear from one of the top jockeys in the sport today, I mentioned Saratoga's leading rider at the moment, Luis Saez, here's the question of the day. Not so much a poll question, but a question of the day. And I'm curious to see what your responses will be. If you could choose one jockey and one trainer to hang out with for a day, who would you pick? You can hang out with them for the entire day. Have lunch, have dinner, watch them do their thing. Ask them anything you want. If you could choose one jockey and one trainer to hang out with for a day, who would you pick? Go to @HRRN on Twitter to let me know your thoughts. If you don't have Twitter, you can do it on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media at all, that's cool. Simply send me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net. That's how you can get in touch with the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts on that one. If you could choose one jockey and one trainer to hang out with for a day, who would you pick? Really anxious to see what these responses will be. All right, when I come back, this very busy show covering all the action taking place on this Saturday afternoon begins, and it begins with Gary Falter from Ownerview. This is the Equine Forum. It's presented by Woodbine Entertainment right here on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. This weekend's races feature the Grade 2 Nassau Stakes for fillies and mares, 4-year-olds and up, going 1 mile on the turf course. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment, along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Arrowgate's going to take the far outside route. He's coming up on the outside of Gunavera, but he's a long way behind Gunrunner and Collected as they make their way to the top of the stretch. in the Breeders' Cup Classic. They're into the stretch, and it's Collected and Gunrunner. They've been battling since the gates opened. Gunrunner's got the lead. Collected West Coast is bearing down on them on the outside. Final 16th. Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collected's alongside, and then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic over Collected. Then came West Coast, followed by War Story. Arrowgate was coming late, but too late. The final time was 2 minutes 1.29 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you from the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the Breeders' Cup Classic, the only time the event has been held at Del Mar in 2017. Gunrunner getting the victory that day. It was a huge effort for Gunrunner, as there were so many of those in his career, but that was certainly one of his signature moments. And the Breeders' Cup will be returning to Del Mar in November, November 5th and 6th. Of course, we'll be there as your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships again this year. We've done that every year since 2007. Very proud to be able to say that. Also very proud to be able to say that we have been associated with each and every Owner View conference since the inception. And it's been a wonderful partnership. And now I welcome in the man who heads up Owner View. That is Gary Falter from the Jockey Club. Gary, good morning, my friend. Some exciting news pertaining to this year's Breeders' Cup event and Owner View.
Yes, Mike, there is some exciting news, and thanks for having me on today.
Looking forward to the visit.
As you've heard, we have decided to host an in-person conference during Breeders' Cup Week, which just was decided recently, and I think a lot of owners have attended in the past, and those who wanted to attend would be pretty excited about getting together again one more time.
Yeah, and for people that aren't familiar with the way that things have been done for the past year or so with the pandemic and with the protocols in place for COVID-19. Let's just fill them in, Gary. You haven't been able to bring everybody together in person, so everything has been done online.
Yes, virtually. This year, we are doing a series of 10 panels, first Tuesday of every month, through Zoom, and it's gone incredibly well. We have over 1,100 owners have registered. We get great attendance for the live version of the virtual conference and the recorded version. So that's been the only opportunity people have had this year. Last year, we actually had to cancel the conference because of COVID. And so it's been since 2019 that we've had an in-person conference. And we're excited about the prospects of hosting this one during the Breeders' Cup on November the 3rd.
Yeah, going to be fantastic. Where is the event going to be held, Gary?
Well, we're still working that out. As you know, Del Mar is a fairly small facility, so we can't be on site. In 2017, we were at the Del Mar Hilton, which is right literally across the street. But the fact that we're starting this so late, that hotel is not available. So we were negotiating with a couple fairly close, very nice hotel venues that'll be our host site, very close to the Del Mar racetrack. And so we'll have it on site at our host hotel, and then shuttle everybody over to the Breeders' Cup on Friday and Saturday.
You know, I mentioned our partnership and the fact that I am very proud to say that we have been together on this since you launched Owner View and had the first conference. I guess it was at Keeneland, right? Was that when Gary Player was there to give the keynote address?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gary Player. I remember, too, having the chance to sit down and visit with Gary Player, and I'll have to replay that interview at some point here for our listeners, because he was so gracious. And you know, you think about what Owner View is all about, and you think about somebody like the Golf Hall of Famer Gary Player. He really epitomizes what this conference and what the theme is all about, doesn't he, Gary, in a lot of ways?
Yeah, he does. And he was very gracious that week. He came in on Monday and stayed the entire week, was accessible to all of our guests who wanted to meet and talk with him. You know, and that's one of the fantastic things about having the in-person is the accessibility of our speakers, our panelists, our keynote speaker, having access to those folks during that period is just great. And the networking that takes place between owners, new partnerships that are put together from just being together and racing syndicates picking up partnerships and people just deciding to take the leap. I got an email just the other day from a gentleman that said, Gary, without this conference, I wouldn't have done this. My wife and I just spent $200,000 on a horse out of the Pasic Tipton Horses of Racing Age sale. So that's our first endeavor by ourselves into ownership. They've been involved in racing syndicates. So, you know, that's just an example of what the conference can do to help a prospective owner, a new owner, or even existing owners just further their knowledge of ownership.
Wow, they didn't just dip their toe in the water, did they? They jumped right into the deep end.
Right.
200 large.
Yeah, they did. But, you know, I've heard stories like that. There was a couple that was part of the Emerald Downs Racing Club that the gentleman was a physician, and you know, there wasn't much of a buy-in to get into that, and after they found that they liked it and they came to the conference twice, they did the same thing, went to Pasic Tipton several years ago, bought a few fillies, I think out of the Eugene Club, or I can't remember the gentleman's name, but out of a dispersal, and ended up with a graded stakes winner and another stakes filly, and that was their first step into, you know, just their own sole ownership. So, you know, our hope is that, you know, we can kind of bridge the gap between somebody coming into the business and not knowing much about it, because it can be intimidating, and help them come in with their eyes wide open. And even those who have been in the business, I've been told many times when they come to the conference or they sit in on the virtual panels that they learn something every time.
Was that the mission statement, Gary, when you began OwnerView in 2014? Was that the main goal that you wanted to accomplish? And if so, do you think you've done it?
Well, with OwnerView, you know, that was a result of the McKinsey study that was done back in, I think it was 2011. They recommended that we build some new resources to encourage thoroughbred ownership. Owners that they had interviewed during that process told them when they came into the business, it was just very difficult. It was like a game board without instructions. And a lot of owners learn by trial and error. So with the launch of OwnerView.com in 2012, and here it is almost 10 years later, it's still out there. It's all free. The information is used every day by many, many people. And then bringing the owner conference in 2014, we feel pretty confident that, you know, we've done what McKinsey recommended to build some new tools, a website, conference that was never done before to encourage ownership.
Mm-hmm. Visiting with the Jockey Club's Gary Falter, the man who heads up OwnerView. You can go to OwnerView.com if you want to learn more about the National Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Again, they will be held in person for the first time in, gosh, over a year, and that will be November 3rd in Del Mar to coincide with the Breeders' Cup. Gary, when folks go to the website, I know that they can watch a lot of the panels that have already been done, and they can read through some of the information if they're curious about getting involved with thoroughbred ownership. But when they attend the conference on November 3rd in Del Mar, number one, they get a chance to be at Del Mar, and that there's nothing wrong with that, especially at that time of year for those folks that aren't based in a warm weather climate. But what else can they expect with their experience when they sign up to attend that conference?
Sure. Well, it's going to be a full day. Typically, we've done 2 days for the in-person conference, but we're so late into the year, we decided, you know, let's have one solid day on Wednesday. So we'll start at 8:30 in the morning and go all the way through to 5 o'clock. And we have the schedule on the website now with the various topics we're going to cover. I'm in the process of lining up the speakers now, but we'll have 6 panels. There'll be a nice lunch during the day. We always have a conference dinner. So Wednesday evening we'll have a dinner, and that's probably our biggest socializing, networking opportunity. And then Thursdays, there's a day of racing at Del Mar. It's kind of an open day. We've left it open from the conference perspective because folks may want to visit some of the sites in the area. And then Friday, Saturday would be Breeders' Cup. And we're talking to the Breeders' Cup about events that are going on during the week that our guests could attend and be a part of, such as maybe the Breakfast Marquee or the Draw, or other events that they have going on during the week. So it's not just the conference itself, but we do try to facilitate some nice social events, giving people the opportunity to do the networking and meet others from around the country.
And for people that have not participated in an owner view conference yet, I will say this, Gary, the thing that's always impressed me is that if I'm somebody that's thinking about getting involved in the sport, and I guess I do this with a lot of things that I try to get involved with, I want to learn as much information about what I'm getting into first. Now, other people will just dive right in and then learn as they go. I'm not that type of person. I want to learn as much as I can before I make that move. And I think that what you've established with OwnerView is so valuable, because it's not just about, hey, here's how you go to the sale and here's how you buy a racehorse and here's what happens after that. You go into panels on the taxes and the legal side of it and all of these different things that people don't necessarily think about. They can get information from A to Z when they attend an OwnerView conference.
Yeah, you know, with the virtual conference we've had this year, we've had some great panels, and we're still going to continue with that. We're only halfway through. We've done five panels. You moderated one of them, Mike. We've got five more coming up, starting with, I think, August 3rd. We have jockeys together with Tom Durkin as the moderator. But, you know, we covered things like claiming. We had four panelists that talked about and went into great detail about claiming, and I got so much great feedback on that. People said, boy, I just really didn't know and understand, and now I have a much better understanding of what the claiming aspect of the industry is all about. We had owners and trainers together talking about that owner-trainer relationship and why it's important, and what you know, rights do owners have to change trainers or to, you know, make recommendations to their trainers, and, you know, what's the trainer's role in all that. You know, he oversees just about everything with the horses. So, you know, with a virtual conference, we've touched a lot of owners. We're averaging about 200 live attendees for the virtual panels, and probably double to triple that on the recorded version, because we record every session and put it out there, because we know not everybody can be available in the middle of the afternoon on a Tuesday, so the whole thing's recorded and made available to anyone that registers. And so, you know, we're averaging 600 owners having opportunity to view either the live or the recorded session, and that's well beyond what I had expected this year. And now that we're going to the live conference at Del Mar, we'll have that many more people who can experience not just the panels and have access to the speakers and the experts, but also be able to meet owners from all around the country and do that networking. And we found out at Keeneland during the very first panel how important that networking and mingling with other owners was as part of the whole event.
Yeah, we'll go to ownerview.com to register for that in-person conference. It will be Wednesday, November 3rd in Del Mar. There will be more details forthcoming. It coincides with the Breeders' Cup World Championships, which are there November 5th and 6th. It's an event that you will not want to miss. And, by the way, take advantage of some of the virtual conferences that Gary just talked about, some of those panels that will be coming up online. Ownerview.com is the place to go.
And I forgot, I didn't say, Mike, that the virtual panels are free.
Yeah.
There's no charge. Our sponsors were great this year, and they're covering the cost of all that. So anybody that wants to participate in the virtual, just go to OwnerView, and you know, there's a link for the virtual conference to register, and it's free. And the owner conference in person, there is a fee for that because there is so much involved, but the virtual is complimentary.
Well, Gary, each week on this program, I identify one of our guests as the industry star of the week for all the work that they do and the tireless efforts they put in to make our sport a success. And you and the team at OwnerView have certainly done that now since 2014. So, Gary, you are this week's industry star of the week. Really appreciate the visit, this interview brought to our listeners by our good friend Stuart Morris, who, of course, offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. Gary, appreciate all of your efforts and everything you do with OwnerView. Keep up the wonderful work, my friend, and thanks for the time this morning.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Have a great day.
All right, Gary Falter. Yeah, that interview brought to you by Stuart Morrison. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, his team. He knows his success is certainly because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is absolutely your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time for today's first bet and a visit with Tom Law, talking some Saratoga. Stay with me. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
When the subject of thoroughbred of this dissertation died September 26, 1945, he left a legacy that stirred more genuine affection in the hearts of sports fans than any other the American turf had ever known. Old Bones, as he later came to be nicknamed, was a lanky foal bred by F.D. Knight and earned universal acclaim on the racetrack in the colors of Willis Sharp Kilmer. As a thoroughbred, he came from nowhere, as the saying goes. His pedigree, My McGee, Out of Fair Empress by Jim Gore, screamed aloud that he was strictly from the wrong side of thoroughbred racing's breeding track, so to speak. Somebody early on in his life had the presence and foresight to give him a name that fit him like a rubber glove and said it all about his talent on the racetrack as well. Exterminator. He started 100 times in his illustrious career, 150 being out of the money only 15 times. He had an interesting propensity to return to the winner's circle standing in a rather homely, ho-hum, nonchalant way. He carried the highest weight handicappers could dream up and did so with pride and with distinction. His composite earnings were astounding for the times, over $250,000. The most he ever earned for a win was $14,700 for his 1918 score in the Kentucky Derby. At that, he got to the Derby accidentally, and that story is well worth retelling. Racing for Carl Milam as a two-year-old after being purchased from his breeder for $1,500 as a yearling, he won four times, but showed little, if anything, by way of class. The next spring, Willis Sharp Kilmer had the sensational colt Sunbriar eligible for the classic run for the Roses, but Sunbriar did not train properly coming up to the race. Shortly before the Derby, Kilmer bought Exterminator from Milam for $9,000 just for the sake of having the silks appear among the starters in the Derby, and the rest is historically chronicled. On a sloppy racetrack, the 30-1 game-gelding nickname Old Bones, Exterminator, splashed his way to a victory in his very first important stakes event. After that, he won every kind of race that racing secretaries could conceive. Oh yes, he was beaten often, but not one time for lack of effort. They piled weight on him that would make a mule driver apologize to a mountain burro and send them on out to take their best at their favorite distance. Exterminator never gave a poor effort. He was the unequivocal thoroughbred idol of racing patrons everywhere, his name a household word. He ran under the tutelage of seven different trainers and made everybody famous that was ever connected with him. As gutsy and courageous a performer as ever set foot on the American racetrack, he was game to the core, even to his last race when he broke down and yet hung on determinedly to finish third. In the early morning hours of September 26, 1945, he met the Grim Reaper in a stall at Sunbriar Court in Binghamton, New York, at the age of 30. An inconspicuous stone marker stands there today above his head on a simple grave overlooking the Susquehanna River alongside his one-time stablemate, Sunbriar. Inconspicuous as it may be, that stone does reflect in its very pristinity that the American turf is a far, far greater and far, far richer institution for Old Bones having passed by. Exterminator.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you. Live Racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky Bred Maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a two-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
We're coming to the top of the stretch of the Oaks, and here comes Search Results. Search Results has taken the lead as they arrive at the eight-fold. Malabat runs at her from the outside. Back into third is Tribal Column toward the rail. Will Secret is trying to mount a charge. Then to Clarier to the outside. Malabat, Search Results, undefeated fillies. 1-2 down to the wire. Who's going to win it? It's Malabat by a neck. Search Results was second, and then came Will Secret and Clarier. The final time, 148.99.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, here on this Saturday morning on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Larry Colmus had the call for you there. That was the Kentucky Oaks earlier this season. The last time we saw the undefeated Malathot in action for trainer Todd Pletcher. Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez is aboard the 2-5 morning line favorite later today in the Coaching Club American Oaks. It's a short field of four, but if you're looking for star power, you're going to get it with Malathat later today. And then, by the way, I gave you this statistic in the first segment of the show, the opening segment, that Ed DeRosa put out there on Twitter about the success of favorites at Saratoga, the graveyard of favorites, graveyard of champions. So far, so good for the favorites, winning at a very high rate. Well, how about this? John Velasquez is tied with Mike Smith for most wins in the Coaching Club American Oaks. He has 5. Todd Pletcher has won that race more than any trainer in history. He's won it 7 times. The last time that he won it was in 2015 with Carolina, who was put up via DQ. John Velasquez was aboard that day. And here they are looking to add to their totals. Johnny would be the all-time leading jockey in the race, and Todd would just continue his dominance over that race in recent years. His first win, by the way, in the Coaching Club American Oaks, 2001, with a horse named Tweedside. Tweedside. Guess who the jockey was? Yeah, Johnny V. They are a deadly combination when they team up, and they have been for many, many years. All right, time now to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's First Bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
And today's First Bet comes in Pimlico's 8th race, the Grade 3 Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup, 419 Eastern is the post. Number 6, Ramsey Solution, is 5-2 on the morning line, has a 31% win projection from First Bet, the highest of Pimlico's 4 stakes today, rates 12 points higher than his next closest rival. ranked first in 11 of the first bet handicapping factors for the race. And the third choice on the morning line is the potential controlling speed in a paceless race, which could lead to a big run in the greatest stakes debut for the five-year-old, who comes into the race with a lifetime record of 5-for-10. Not too shabby. Number six, Ramsey Solution in today's eighth race at Pimlico is today's first bet. I'm going to preview all the stakes action with Pimlico handicapper Naomi Tucker coming up at 9:40 Eastern, but I'm back to talk some Saratoga with Tom Law in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number one, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
All right, well, I told you at the top of the show that there are a total of 13 stakes races set to be run throughout North America later today. Eight of those are going to be contested among three racetracks, Saratoga, Del Mar, and Pimlico. Of those 13 stakes, six of them are graded. Five of the six are going to be held at either Saratoga, Del Mar, or Pimlico, with the lone exception being the Grade 2 Nassau at Woodbine. Well, Saratoga has two of those graded stakes, the Grade 1 Coaching Club American Oaks and the Grade 3 Caress Stakes. And who better to talk Saratoga than our good friend Tom Law of the Saratoga Special and ThisIsHorseRacing.com. Tom, good morning, my friend. Happy Saratoga Saturday.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. Great to hear from you. I hope all is well down in Lexington.
Yeah, everything's good here. What are things like today on this Saturday in Saratoga?
Oh, you know, it couldn't have been a more beautiful morning this morning. It was kind of cool when I got up. I think it said 58 on the temp. Went out to the track and helped deliver the Saratoga Special all around the track. As you know, we do a little bit of everything with our team, and like a big fog set in. I don't know if people can get online. Probably, I'm sure a lot of photographers got some great shots of this fog that kind of rolled in about 7:30. But it's all burned off now. Crystal blue skies, and it's warming up. It's going to be a gorgeous day today. So great card on tap. Like you said, the two graded stakes kind of anchoring the day, but should be a big day here at Saratoga.
Yeah, I talked about the Coaching Club American Oaks earlier in the program. You know, four horses, but the betting side of it might not be that great. It's not a great betting race, but if you're looking for star power, the race has it. You're going to get, some people think, maybe the top three-year-old in the country of either sex, and that's Malathat.
Yeah, I mean, her race in the Oaks and in the Ashland, for that fact, you know, she hadn't run since December, and to come back in a Grade 1 race at Keeneland, coming from off the pace, a little bit up against it sometimes there at Keeneland, it was a very impressive race. And, you know, I heard Larry Kalmus call earlier of Search, you know, running for her to run down Search Results, who's a really nice filly in her own right, you know, obviously came back and won after that, and just lights out. I mean, it's a four horse field, unfortunately, but you know, wish you had a few more in there so we could do some playing, but it's gonna be hard to bet against her today, especially, you know, from the rail. I think Johnny is probably gonna, you know, play his hand pretty early. If you read today's Saratoga Special, actually, Sean Clancy talked to him quite a bit yesterday morning, kind of about his tactics and what his plans are. You know, he basically said, if somebody wants to go, they can go ahead and go. But it sounds like maybe he's going to try to dictate the pace, and he feels like everybody's going to be kind of watching him in such a small field. So he does not want to be coming from behind and trying to pass these horses, for sure.
Yeah, you know, he is just so smart. right? A guy like, I mean, obviously he's seasoned. He's maybe, some people would say, the greatest jockey in the history of the sport. But one thing that makes him so good is that he's, number one, tireless in his preparation. And number two, he thinks through everything, even before the race. Yeah. And then he has multiple plans when he gets in the starting gate. That's what makes him so tough to beat.
He does. And I think he showed that in the Oaks. You know, she was, didn't get away real well, got kind of bumped and jostled around a little bit in some parts of the race. And he really had to, you know, go to plan B or plan C. I think he even said that after the race and kind of get her in the race, you know, where she's sort of in a tracking spot in fifth. I don't think it was like she was ever going to be like winging on the lead, but, you know, he, again, like you said, he was very prepared. He's very decisive in what he wants to do, and you know that sets up well for in a race with a small field where it's going to be very, very tactical. You know, with it'd be interesting to see what the other horses do. Like if anyone wants to really kind of is intent on the lead, I guess maybe Rock Paper Scissors, Rodolphe Brisset's horse, won by open lengths last time at Indiana Grand. You know, this is a little different, class in here. And Clary Air is a nice, classy horse, but she usually comes from behind as well. So it's interesting to see what'll happen. You know, we don't have long to wait now. It's only the race goes off at 3:23, yeah. Kind of an early Grade One for Saratoga. But yeah, like you said, it's just a four horse field, so they put it earlier on the card. I think it's going to be a good race, and I did notice a filly like that showcased at a place like Saratoga.
Yeah, that's where she should be showcased. That's where the best of the best for generations have gathered, and she certainly fits the bill right now. Undefeated Kentucky Oaks winner and 2-5 on the morning line is Malathat in today's Coaching Club American Oaks. Tom mentioned it's early, race number 5, because of the four-horse field. If you download the Saratoga special today at thisishorseracing.com and you flip to page 21, you're going to see the selections from Tom and from the team at the Saratoga special for all 11 races. And Tom, I did notice that everybody has Malathat on top, but you have one contrarian in Charles Bedard who said, nope, Clary Air is going to take home the top prize in there. I guess he's relying on the whole graveyard of favorites thing, right?
I guess so. He, you know, maybe he's hoping for the freshness angle. I mean, Clary Air certainly run, you know, she ran in the Oaks and then she had another race in the Mother Goose last time and finished third, you know, after kind of a troubled trip. You know, Charles is, I guess he's trying to be the contrarian. When I was going through and putting that page together yesterday, I did have to do a double take. I was a little bit surprised at that, but Charles is certainly capable of picking some winners. It wouldn't be a total surprise. You know, I know Malathat's a deserving odds-on favorite, but, you know, Clary Air at one time was, you know, one of the main favorites for the Kentucky Oaks and didn't run poorly in there. She got beat 3 lengths. Steve Asmussen's barn is really firing so far at Saratoga like they often do. You know, he's steamrolling towards the all-time leading training crown for winners. Probably going to get it real soon. But, yeah, it's when I do my handicapping, I do factor in how well that barn is doing. And yeah. Steve comes up here kind of ready to roll every year. And obviously a curling filly that is going to really appreciate the two turns, kind of the, you know, it's a little bit of a demanding race at Saratoga, the mile and eight. But again, you got a curling filly in Malathat too. So it's could be a good showcase for curling today.
The other greatest stake, which, again, not a huge field, 6 horses signed yep. on for the Grade 3 Caress. That's a 5.5-furlong sprint on the main track for fillies and mares, 4-year-olds and up. It's race number 10, 6:13 Eastern is the post. That's a relatively competitive race, but you got a couple of horses in the first couple posts, 1 and 2, that look like they could be taking a lot of money in there.
Yeah, you know, this is a funny race because over the years it's been kind of a race where it's kind of a maybe been put on a Sunday or a weekday, and it's been kind of a ho-hum race, you know, where you're like, okay, older fillies and mares, turf sprinters, but the field that they got together for this one is really interesting. You mentioned the two inside horses, Caravelle is Lizzie Merriman from shipping up from Fairhill. She was just ran a outstanding race on the Preakness weekend and the very one, and then came back with a really strong race last time out at Monmouth. She draws the rail with Irad Ortiz, and then right alongside is Jose Ortiz on Robin Sparkles, the New York bred filly that won up here last summer. She broke her maiden up here for 40, and she's since gone on to kind of go through her New York bred conditions. She runs on the turf or the dirt, and Bruce Brown is really high on her. He's a kind of a low key, kind of understated kind of guy, but seems very, very confident in her. And, you know, if you look at it, you're like, man, it's got to be those two. It's got to be those two. And I went back and forth. There's a lot of guys in here that could be primed for the upset. I mean, Mike Maker has Jakarta on the outside. He's off to a good start to the meet. He's got five winners so far, had a good last couple days. Shug McGahee is going with Flower Point. She ran for the first time for him in the license fee against Robin Sparkles and Caravelle. And then just to their inside is In Good Spirits, Al Stahl. We were sitting around the office last night, and we're kind of like, you know, this race looks like one of those races that sets up for like an Al Stahl upset. You know, his filly is there. She shows up almost every time, has the benefit of a little bit of spacing in her races. She ran in April in the Giants Causeway at Keeneland, finished fourth, just kind of a mid-pack trip the whole way, but is very capable. I mean, she's run well at the fairgrounds in turf sprints, at Churchill in turf sprints. She ran up here last summer two summers ago in the off-the-turf race. But, you know, Al is always comes kind of with horses that are ready to run. He brings a small stable up here, but they usually factor, and he's already been in the win column this year. So, but it's going to be tough to get past those first two. But if I were to lean towards an upset, maybe I would go with In Good Spirits for Al Stahl.
Talking with Tom Law from the Saratoga Special, and this is horseracing.com. Tom, any other race or horse that stood out to you on this Saturday card that you think people should keep an eye on?
Whew. You know, Saratoga, it's always a loaded day. You know, I think in the seventh race, Christophe Clement, talk about another guy that's off to a hot start. I mentioned Maker, I mentioned Asmussen. There's three guys tied for the leading trainer right now, and Christophe is one of them. He runs a horse named Space Launch in here. It's a mount of 16th, allowance optional, kind of non-winners of one race. Space Launch ran, you know, comes off a couple thirds. One was at the end of the year last year, and then kind of a prep on May 2nd. Great spacing for him in there. I like him. I picked him in the paper today. You know, you always got to look at the Saratoga, and you always got to think about two-year-olds, right? So, I mean, there is a two-year-old race on the card. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on what race number it is. Mike, you probably got it handy, more handy than me. This is great radio.
I actually have the whole program sitting in front of me here, but now you have me flipping through.
Well, you know, it's I've already started to dig into tomorrow's card. It's always crazy, you know. You're getting you're always working ahead in the newspaper business, and even though we don't have an edition tomorrow, we're kind of already looking ahead. So, you know, but yeah. Like I said, it's going to be a good day.
It's the sixth race,
Saratoga.
Tom.
Hopefully, we'll have some
winners. The sixth race is that 2-year-old race, 6 furlongs.
Yeah.
$100,000 stakes purse, really.
Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing, you know, can't be understated. You know, we're talking about $100,000, $105,000 allowance in maiden races. Just amazing, the purse structure that they've come up with for the horses to compete for. Yeah, but, you know, Asmussen's got a good one in that 2-year-old race in Chileno, the gun runner. The gun runners have come out running. He ran fourth to Ottoman Empire, who's a horse that Tom Amos is pretty high on. He didn't run great in the Stanford opening weekend, but, you know, the way Steve's horses have come out running, I think Chileno is 9-2 on the line. I'd like to catch a price like that today, right after, that's the sixth race, so right after the coaching club.
Yep. Yeah, it would be a great horse to have in there, no doubt about it. Tom, before I let you go, it looks like I've got about a minute and a half left. What other things have you seen? I know it's early in the meet, but from the first 70 races or so that we've seen run, what are some of the things that have stood out to you so far?
Well, you know, coming in, everybody's always, it's the leading trainer is going to come down to Todd Pletcher or Chad Brown. And one thing I think you've seen is, I don't want to say they're struggling, but they're not winning races in bunches like they quite often do and separate themselves from the rest of the trainer standings. Chad won the feature yesterday with technical analysis in the Lake George to get him to three wins for the meet. And he even admitted himself. He's like, you know, hopefully some of my fans made a little bit of money back because we've gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. You know, the same with Todd. I know he was, you know, a little bit confident in his two-year-olds, but he does feel like a lot of his two-year-olds are late developing types or horses that are going to really want a distance of ground. So he may not be as strong kind of in the 5.5, 6, 6.5 furlong type maiden races early on that he has been in the past. So, you know, I sort of thought that might be coming, and I sort of factored that into my handicapping early on. I don't want to say I took a big stand against some of the Chad Brown horses, but I did in some spots, and, you know, it paid off. I managed to get off to a pretty good start picking winners in the paper. I'd like to translate that into making a little bit of money at the windows. But so far, so good. You know, I think as the meet goes on, you know, you'll start to see horses run back, and that's when you'll really start to see horses that kind of either favor it up here or simply don't like it up here. And that's always a big factor into my handicapping as well.
Yeah, well, Tom, listen, man, you guys do a great job. Again, this is horseracing.com, Saratoga special. Really appreciate the visit here this morning, my friend, and enjoy Saratoga.
Absolutely.
On this Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Mike. Say hi to the team back there. You guys do a great job, too, and look forward to talking to you again down the road.
I will do. Tom Law here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going to get to another break and get you set for hour number two when I come back. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures. Earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player. No matter the challenges I face every day in the NFL, my mom is always there for me, despite her own struggles with muscular dystrophy. And MDA is there for my mom. At their 150 care centers across the U.S., MDA is the leading organization in research and care for kids and adults with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases. Join me and learn more at helpmda.org today. Thank you.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spios, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day presented by Twin Spires on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't forget, if you love the outdoors and you are going to be in the Central Kentucky area, or if you live here, then there is certainly no excuse. You need to head over to the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It is located just a few miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. So if you see Tevis in there, talk some horse racing and then talk to him about a little bit of hunting, whether it's deer, turkey, ducks, it doesn't really matter. They have something for everybody. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. All right, well, coming up in hour number two, it is going to be extremely busy. Nancy LaSala is the president of the PDJF. She has a huge announcement about a very big day coming up to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. That kicks things off coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Then Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. This week's edition, I honor Leslie Janica, who is the coordinator of KEMI, the Kentucky Equine Management Internship Program. That comes up at 9:20. At 9:40, I'll welcome in Naomi Tucker, who is the handicapper at Pimlico, and that will round out hour number two. But the third hour, just the hits just keep on coming. You're going to hear from Louis Saez and Kieran McLaughlin. You're going to hear Kurt Becker stroll through racing history. In the final segment of the show at 10:40, I will welcome Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. So plenty of things still ahead. Stay with me. Going to come back with hour two right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. 2020 Preakness winner Swiss Skydiver will once again take on the boys, this time in the August 7th Grade 1 Whitney at Saratoga Racecourse. Originally scheduled to run in the Grade 3 Shoevie against fillies and mares at the Spa, trainer Ken McPeak was forced to call an audible after a case of equine herpes in the barn his runners are stabled in was placed on quarantine until August 1st. Swiss Skydiver is no stranger to Saratoga, having won the premier three-year-old filly contest, the Grade 1 Alabama, at the Upstate Oval last year before her Preakness upset. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Well, appreciate that, Big A. Thanks for the update there. Yeah, big day of racing at Saratoga and around the country. Welcome back, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. I told you about the big racing coming up all over the country. You have the two greatest stakes at Saratoga. You have a big one down at Pimlico. You have a couple of really nice stakes races out at Del Mar. And again, going to visit with Richard Mandela to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup in the final segment of the show at 10:40 Eastern Time. But in a few minutes, I'm going to welcome in Nancy LaSala, who is the president of the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. She will kick off this second hour of the program. I threw out a poll question at the top of the show, as I do every week here on the Equine Forum, and the responses are coming in bunches, and I appreciate everybody who's weighed in on this question. More of a question of the day as opposed to an actual poll question, but I want to know, if you could choose one jockey and one trainer to hang out with for a day, an entire day, who would you pick? One jockey and one trainer. You only get one of each. Let's see. Looks like Andrew says Chantel Sutherland, and the trainer would be Team O'Neill after getting to meet them at Pimlico and the Preakness in 2012. Really enjoyed meeting them. John Gosden and Frankie Dettori. There's a good pair. How about Big Money Mike Smith and trainer Todd Pletcher? That works. Mikey says John Velasquez and Todd Pletcher. That will be a popular choice, I'm sure. And Nick weighs in and says D. Wayne, Wayne Lucas, and Angel Cordero. Yeah, pretty good duo there, too. How about some of the Facebook responses here before we get to Nancy LaSala? Some of the Facebook responses coming in. Let's see. Victor Espinoza and Chad Brown, Johnny V and Kenny McPeak, Steve Cawthon and Shug McGahey. How cool would that be? Hang out with Steve Cawthon and Shug McGahey for a day. The stories you could hear there just be fantastic. All right, keep the responses coming at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, that's cool. Just email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know if you could choose one jockey and one trainer to hang out with for an entire day. Who would you pick? I wouldn't mind hanging out with Nancy LaSala for a day. I've done that. That's a lot of fun. Her and her husband, Jerry, who is a retired jockey, who, by the way, has worked with us here on the network a little bit up at Arlington Park when we were there years ago. Great people. And Nancy is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Been too long. I'd like to hang out with you guys for the day again. We haven't seen each other in forever.
You know, it seems like forever. I know I spoke with Michelle. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, be fantastic. Big news coming out of the PDJF world this week.
Yeah, Mike. We're, you know, emerging from this pandemic, which we're glad to do, and we're glad to see things return to normal. And there's some normalcy. I think we have a ways to go, but I think if everybody comes together, we'll make it. We'll get there. And PDJF just made a press release the other day. I'm sure you've seen it. And we're looking forward to working with the Jockeys Guild and NTRA. And we put together the format for this Day of Awareness on July 31st.
Yeah, it'll be spectacular. You know, how many years ago was it, Nancy, that the idea came up to start PDJF Day across America, and you had so many racetracks that immediately embraced it. When was that? Was that 5, 6, 7 years ago?
No, actually, Mike, I think it's 10 plus years.
It hasn't been that long. Okay,
throwing the pandemic here, which no one was doing anything, but yeah, it's over 10 years. It was simultaneous with about a year prior to us starting karaoke in Saratoga, which
yeah.
We would have celebrated our 10 year anniversary in 2020. So it's been that long.
Will there be karaoke this year in Saratoga?
Unfortunately not.
Yeah.
No karaoke in Saratoga, and unfortunately not in Del Mar as well. As you know, we added Del Mar to the format a few years ago, and it was great to have the two sides of the country compete against each other. But with COVID restrictions in some of the venues and some of the things that they have still going on, we decided to wait until 2022.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Just that you better to err on the side of caution and do it right when you get things back and have everybody back together again. That'll be a lot of fun.
We
something to look
house.
Forward to. Yeah, you'll have a full house. You always have a full house for the. I remember when PDJF did the karaoke events here at Keeneland, they were always packed.
That was the first, and that is where the concept was created. That's correct.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun, and I think the riders enjoy it too because they get up there and they know, you know, most of them know that they're not good singers or dancers or whatever it might be, but they really embrace it because of the, you know, the charitable aspect of it all, and they just have fun with it. It's, you know, what I like about those events too, Nancy, is that people get to see jockeys and talk to them and mingle with them and have that social interaction, but they get to see them in a light that they don't often get to see them.
You're correct, and the karaoke is, as you know, you've been to many of them. I'm sure a lot of your fans have seen them, and you know, last few years we actually streamed them on Facebook. So people that weren't in attendance around the country also participated and would give their commentary. But it is an opportunity for them to get up there and do this for the charity to bring awareness. But at the same time, it's a camaraderie that they have. The jockeys in their profession, in things they do outside of their profession, they do have their family, their unity, their unit, and they come together and they do it all the time for PDJF.
Let's talk a little more about the event on July 31st. That is Saturday, July 31st. It is National Disability Independence Day, and this will be a a way to raise funds and raise awareness for the Permanently Disabled mm-hmm. Jockeys Fund and the riders that are disabled because of the accidents that they sustained on the racetrack. Tell me more about the day and what folks can expect.
Well, the unique thing about the day is that it brings all the racetracks around the country together. At this time, I have confirmations from, I'm going to say, all the racetracks that are running that day. And a couple of the racetracks, due to other ongoing activities they have, it might be limited, but they want to do something more after that. So I'm glad that all of them have chosen to join us and celebrate this day, allow the jockeys to wear the armbands to show their solidarity with this, to raise awareness for the American Disability Act. I mean, I think sometimes we take things for granted, which we shouldn't, but it was 31 years ago, and that's not a long time to know that this part of our population did not have some of the conveniences that they need for their disabilities, because it improves their quality of life, from housing to facilities, access. I mean, it's just a necessary piece of legislation, and to think that it was only done 31 years ago.
Yeah, and I know that throughout the day, the fans and industry participants are going to be encouraged to contribute to the PDJF. And as you know, Nancy, you know this, but our listeners who tune in every week also know that PDJF is near and dear to my heart and to Michelle's heart. We have made the PDJF our official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network for the past, 15 plus years, I guess. And it's been a wonderful relationship. And I would encourage people to do whatever they can to help out the organization. And when people hear me talk about it, Nancy, and they say, okay, I say go to PDJF.org, make your donation, support the PDJF. I don't know if they fully grasp the true reason behind that organization and that charity. So fill people in. Why is it so important that the PDJF receives funding from outside sources?
Yeah, funding for the PDJF brings much-needed funding to individuals' homes. And as you know, Mike, I'm always looking for an opportunity to create guaranteed revenue streams because it's needed. These families' homes rely on it. One of the things that really it got to me, and I didn't realize it, we entered COVID last year, and within the first few months, I had, it was a number, a third maybe, of our recipients contact us out of concern. And their concern was with COVID, no fundraising, because they know we rely on fundraising. Yeah. Are we going to be able? You going to be able to continue to assist us and to support us? And you know, we are fortunate because at the end of 2019, we had some donors that we weren't planning. It wasn't on our forecast. And with those donations, it allowed us to sustain because it wasn't a part of our budget at that time. So things came together. And because we were able to maintain funding, even without the fundraising elements, again, not at the levels that we're accustomed to, but we were able, and the board was able to approve a stipend, an additional stipend, to send them to January 2021. And I will tell you that stipend was so overwhelmingly received. So when those types of things happen that they're not expected to see that type of concern, it lets you know how important it is.
How many jockeys currently benefit from the contributions that are made to the PDJF?
Currently, it's 59, and 59 families that we assist, that we connect with, that we form a community. We support them. We learn about some of the things and challenges that they go through, and whatever we could do to be there for them, we will try to be there for them. But the financial assistance to allow them to conduct their daily lives and have medical or therapies that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do is very important.
Yeah, I have met so many of the disabled riders at some of the fundraising events, and it's always inspirational to talk to them because, first of all, they appreciate everything that PDJF does for them, but they don't look at themselves as disabled. They know that they've had this incident, and they know that they may be confined to a wheelchair or whatever it might be. But mm-hmm. Nancy, they're so uplifting when you get a chance to visit with so many mm-hmm. of these disabled riders, and they're so appreciative of everything that you and your team and everybody who makes a contribution to PDJF have done for them.
Yeah, they are inspirational. For me to know some of the things that they go through that's not in the in the public light, and how they handle those challenges, those obstacles, they're just amazing. They're an amazing group of people.
Well, the PDJF has dispersed over $11.5 million to permanently disabled jockeys, and most of those sustaining paralysis, traumatic brain injuries from those accidents that they have suffered on the racetrack. And it's a wonderful organization. PDJF.org is where you can learn more. Nancy, one more time, just recap what folks can look forward to next Saturday.
Well, next Saturday, one of the things I would suggest, if you're going to go on site at a racetrack, you know, reach out to the local racetrack and see what they have on their calendar. What we're providing the racetracks is with all the information and the ads and everything, to have a consistent format. We do know, and we allow each racetrack to conduct what they want to, what they want or able to do on their sites, because of restrictions. Everybody has to follow a different subset of rules, which we fully understand. But they will be working with the local jockey colony, and the jockey colony will be speaking to the public. And, you know, I'm going to be at Saratoga. They're planning an autograph session. And in 2020, we did not have one. So I assume that the fans are going to be excited about that. Each racetrack will be formulating their own plans and what they're planning to do. And I would, you know, definitely tell people to reach out to their local tracks.
Yeah, great stuff. Nancy, I as part of our efforts to support PDJF, we've launched a new segment here on the program, and I made you aware of it 6 or 8 weeks ago now. It is called In the Room with Sean Clancy, which folks can listen to via podcast on our website at horseracingradio.net. They can also listen live to the segment here on the Equine Forum every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock Eastern. This week, Sean catches up with jockey Luis Saez and his agent, Kieran McLaughlin. He catches up with both of them together. It's going to be a great visit at 10 Eastern. But last week, he caught up with Mike Luzzi. And they did it sitting next to the racetrack at Saratoga one morning, and Mike working his way back from injury. And in the Saratoga special this morning, they point out that Mike Luzzi was quoted this week as saying, "I told them I had nothing to do with it. I just answered the questions." And that was Mike referring to the fact that he had so many friends compliment him on his interview that he did with Sean Clancy on that In the Room segment last week. So people are listening. People are interested in the jockeys. And a portion of the sponsorship associated with that In the Room segment goes straight back to PDJF so that we can help disabled riders. And we encourage everybody to do the same. It's very much a worthy cause.
And Mike, I want to thank you. I want to thank you and Michelle and your team, your staff. You give us every opportunity and a platform for the PDJF, and that's what's needed, awareness and the support of the fans in the industry. Well, hopefully it'll get us out, or across the finish line.
Yeah, and as we build that segment, by the way, I want to thank our friends at MyRacehorse.com who have come on board as a sponsor. Last week on the network, you heard an interview with the folks at Fanticipate, who have launched a new program in conjunction with Breeders' Cup. They are looking to become involved as a sponsor there. Again, all with the hopes of supporting PDJF through their mm-hmm. sponsorship of that In the Room segment. So my thanks to those two great organizations, too. And Nancy, listen, hope to catch up with you in person here soon. And congrats on getting this off the ground for next Saturday, July 31st.
Mike, thank you very much.
All right, Nancy LaSala, president of the PDJF. Yeah, fantastic stuff. And if you do want to support PDJF and you want to do it through those In the Room segments that we bring you every week, and trust me, they have been amazing. Some of those visits that Sean has had, the conversations, jockey-to-jockey conversations with some of our guests have been incredible. You can do that. Just contact me, Mike, at horseracingradio.net, and we can get you set up. And again, a portion of the proceeds from that particular segment, all going to benefit PDJF. All right, when I come back, it is time to welcome in this week's Unsung Hero, presented by Claiborne, and still to come, Naomi Tucker from Pimlico, and Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup Challenge Series just means more.
They're off in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
It means more competition.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
It means more at stake.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
It means more to owners.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
It means win and you are in.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup Win and You're In Series.
Worldwide races. Win one and earn an automatic paid entry to the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
With $31 million in purses and awards on the line.
If we're considering two different races and one was a win and you're in and one was not, that would be the tiebreaker.
This is the series you can't afford to miss. This is the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series Win and You're In.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky Bred Maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a 2-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder. It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Here's the wire! Rachel won! She is indeed Rachel Alexandra the Great!
I will never forget the roar and the feeling of the ground shaking as the great Rachel Alexandra, the daughter of Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, beat the boys in the 2009 renewal of the historic Woodward at Saratoga. And that brilliant effort makes the great Rachel Alexandra your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, the all-time leading sire of black type winners at Saratoga with 20. AP Indy is next with 19, followed by Giants Causeway with 17. Danzig, Stormcat, Tappet, and Spitestown each with 16. But Medaglia d'Oro stands alone. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion!
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Oh, it's a sport that is filled with unsung heroes, and this particular segment, one of my favorite new segments we launched earlier this year. My thanks to Claiborne for making it possible. Unsung heroes, and I welcome in a true unsung hero in our sport this morning. That is Leslie Janica, who is the coordinator of KEMI, the Kentucky Equine Management Internship Program. Leslie, first of all, good morning, and congratulations on being named this week's unsung hero.
Well, good morning yourself, and I am really honored and flattered that you would consider me to be an unsung hero.
I think so. You know, I mean, you think about
what this segment is all about and what Unsung Hero really represents. It's people like yourself in our sport who do yeoman's work and do things that really do benefit the industry, but you know, you're not in the limelight every single day. You're not seeing your name in the headlines on Bloodhorse and TDN every single day. You do it because of the passion you have for the students that you welcome to KIMI, and you do it because of the fact that you love this industry. And I, on behalf of the industry, I can't thank you enough. I think you do wonderful work.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me more about KIMI, first of all, and then we'll talk a little bit more about you and how you became involved.
Well, the KIMI program is, it was started, I guess, where this is our 22nd year of giving internships. And it was started by a group that came out of the Kentucky Thoroughbred Farm Managers Club. There's always been an ongoing conversation about how do we attract new people to the sport and how do we get young people interested. And so, you know, 20 or so years ago, same conversation, right? So they started the program sort of, you know, based on the Irish National Stud Program in Ireland in a sense. We're different than they are, but in a similar sense that we would invite young people from around the world here to Central Kentucky, and with the support of all the farms in the area, be able to provide at least a 6-month or a 1-year experience so that we could get some people that we knew loved horses, but then in turn take that love of horses and the passion for the horses and teach them about thoroughbred racing and how our industry works in the hopes that they would find long-term careers and jobs within the industry. So we've been doing this for, I've been here for 20 years now, so that's kind of the premises or the basis that we're trying to find young people who love horses and kind of bring that love of horses into an appreciation and a education about racing and the industry.
And it's worked. It's been extremely successful. Tell me about some of the success stories and some of the things that you're so proud of with your time at KIMI.
You know, people ask me a lot of times, you know, who is the most successful student that has come out of the program? And I always have to say, well, how do you define success? Because it can be a lot of things. You know, it's labeled as a management internship, but I think students, sometimes they come in and they think they want to be a farm manager, but then they see something else that sparks their interest. So we've had 1,000 interns that have come through the program, and right now we're at about a 95 to 98% retention rate within the industry. So most of them get a job right after the internship, but they do a little bit of everything. We have certainly have some that are in management positions at farms, everything from entry-level managers up to general managers. We have many, probably 20 to 25% that go on to veterinary school and are veterinarians that are working, you know, either at the clinics or at the farms or at the racetrack. We've got ones that are trainers now. We've got some that have are jockeys. We have one that is in charge of the stewards at the British Racing Association.
Wow.
So they just do a lot of different things. It's hard to say that there's one that's the most successful. I'm just happy that they, you know, appreciate the sport and they learn about the sport and that they are interested in staying within it and finding their careers here.
I know you do a lot of traveling. I don't know how much traveling you've done over the last year or so. Probably not as much, certainly, as you would normally. But when you get a chance to talk to potential students about KIMI and the program, what are some of the things that you make sure you let them know when you talk to them before they start enrolling?
Well, you're right about not being able to travel much last year, but to give you an example, I guess in 2019, I actually visited about 80 college campuses, which
wow,
is a lot, but I love it. That's a great part of my job, being able to go out and tell people around the world about how great this sport is, but I don't talk necessarily. I try to connect with them on the level that I think brought all of us to the sport, and that's the love of the horse. So you go into a college classroom or, you know, equestrian team meeting or rodeo club meeting or just a general ag class or careers class, and you kind of hit on that whole idea of the love of the horse and the beauty of the horse and how much we were all attracted to that first sight or smell or touch or feel or whatever. And then I kind of explained to them about, you know, the different jobs, because as more and more young people are not coming off of farms and they're getting sort of a little farther removed from agriculture or that sort of thing, you have to kind of reconnect back with them and you tell them about that. And then you say, you know, you might have never thought you could have a job or a career working with horses, but there's lots of different avenues into taking that love and transitioning into something that can be a lifelong opportunity. And so we talk about, you know, the breeding side, which most people can really connect with, and then, you know, talk a little bit about the sales and marketing. And at the end of that, I say, look, if this is something that interests you, here's a way to get the foot in the door. Come and do our internship because we'll put you on some of the best farms. You'll be around these fantastic animals. And then you'll kind of be able to explore and see different avenues and different jobs and different careers out there. And you'll find the place that suits you and you'll make it.
What's the most rewarding part of the job for you, Leslie?
Everything. getting to travel definitely is a perk. But I think for me, and I've told my board members this a lot of times, even if a student decides not to come to do the internship, or once they do the internship, they decide it's not for them, I think the best part for me is the ability to go out and talk to people about racing and to talk about thoroughbreds and to show them that we love our horses and we do the best that we can and we're trying always to do a better job. And so, you know, there's a lot of, I hate to say, negative publicity about racing, but if you can get out there and talk to people and show them that you care and other people care, I think it goes a long way to putting a, you know, a good kind of perspective on the industry and a good, you know, voice to it. And so, like I said, even if they decide not to come, they've learned something about our sport and they've learned a little bit more that they can share and pass on. And then the students that come into our program and they see how the farms operate and how we care about nutrition and we care about their health and we care about, you know, injuries and lameless and all that, and we're trying to do better, then they can go and project that onto their own friends or their own family, and that kind of spreads the word like a little spider web. You know, it goes out and out and out, and it just helps people understand the sport and realize that we're all in this for the good of the horse, which is why we all came into it anyway.
Visiting with this week's unsung hero, who is Leslie Janica, the coordinator of the KEME program here in Kentucky, Kentucky Equine Management Internship. You can go to KEME, KEMI.org, to learn more about the program. Leslie, let me talk about you for a minute. Where did the love of horses and horse racing begin for Leslie Janica?
I don't know. Honest truth. my grandparents were all immigrants to this country, and my parents were first generation Americans, and we definitely didn't grow up in a wealthy environment. Didn't grow up with agriculture. Didn't grow up with horses or anything. But I was always fascinated by them, and my mom says that horse is my first word, and I don't know if that's true or not, but I was obsessed with horses as a child. And you know, when you're in school and you get those little book clubs, I bought every horse book and I read everything I could. But I do remember as a child, my grandfather was a big sports fanatic. He was always watching some kind of sports, and I know that I watched the Derby with him and horse racing in general. You know, in the late 60s, early 70s, there was a lot more horse racing on TV, so I can remember watching horse racing and just being fascinated by it. But I was not able to have a horse because, you know, we just couldn't afford one. But I went to college at Texas A&M University, started out as a biology major, but realized there were horses on campus. And so I switched to animal science and got myself an entry-level job at the horse barn, you know, cleaning stalls, grooming horses, the same thing, and just kind of always kept that interest in horses. And I was extremely, extremely fortunate during my time in Texas to meet Mickey and Marshall Robinson. Mm-hmm. I had gone with some friends to the Texas Thoroughbred Breeders Sale on a whim, and I met them. Some of you may know them. They bred Groovy, who was champion sprinter in 1987, and somehow I convinced them that I needed to come work for them. And so when I finished my degree, I went to work at their farm, and I stayed working with them for probably 5 years, and that was probably just... It was the most amazing experience because I met a lot of people in the industry, and I really, you know, I always tell people when they ask me, who's your favorite horse? And I'm always going to say Groovy, because I think that was the trigger, because without Groovy, obviously the Robinsons wouldn't have been so successful and I would have never met them. And that was my foot in the door, working for them.
Yeah, it's incredible. Everything happens for a reason. And, you know, just the fact that you start out as a biology major and then switch over to animal science, and, you know, and then one thing leads to another, and here we are, you know, talking about this relationship that you have today. And now you're giving back. You're going out and you're talking to students, and you're giving back to them. You've been in their shoes before, which I think is a massive selling point for you. When you go out and talk to people about the KEAMI program, you know where they are in their development and in their thought processes, and that has to be huge too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would have been the ideal student if this program would have been available to me when I was a college student. I would have been the first one to sign up, for sure. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about it. You know, there's some people that think you have to be born into this industry to be successful, or you have to, you know, grow up on a farm, and I'm living proof you don't, you know. And that's what I try to tell people. It's, you know, there's so many opportunities in this industry, so many things somebody can do. But I think the heart of it is being on a farm and learning how a farm operates. I mean, how can you sell feed to someone as a rep of a feed company if you haven't been on a farm and seen how they feed horses? You know, how can you be a great vet if you haven't been around a farm and seen how we take care of horses? You know, so I think that's kind of the baseline, and getting that early education, especially if you didn't grow up on a farm or a ranch or something like that. But you can come from anywhere and be successful. But it all comes back to, you have to love the horses, have to want to do what's right up for the horse.
Yeah, and that's one of the cool things about what you do with KEAMI, is you try to expose the students to as many different aspects of the industry as you possibly can. I mean, heck, you even invite me in from time to time to bore them for about a half an hour when I tell them my story. So, you know, there are a lot of different aspects that you try to touch on with your students, and you leave no stone unturned.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that we do. So the internship is involved with the students live and work on the farm, so they, you know, do the grunt work, they're cleaning the stalls, they're grooming the horses, they're feeding the horses. But at least once or sometimes twice a week, we bring people from the industry to tell them their story. And we talk about, you know, nutrition and exercise physiology, and we talk about, you know, health. And we bring people from all facets of the industry in, because you never know what's going to click. And you never know, you know, what might work or what area of the industry they might be really successful in. You know, a lot of them come to us, they want to be farm managers, they want to be veterinarians, and then they see something else, and it's like, well, that's really what I'd like to do. But you never know unless you come and you try and you see and you explore and like I said, find out what works.
Leslie, what are you probably most proud of when you think back on everything that you've been able to accomplish and everything you've been able to do with the students through the KEAMI program? What do you think you're maybe the one or two things you're most proud of?
Well, that's hard to say. I think a lot of times when a student will come back to me who is successful now in their career, and they'll say, you know, I never would have been here. I never would have had this job had it not been for KEAMI. You know, I would have been doing something totally different. But because you came and you talked to my class, I decided to try, and here I am, and now I'm doing X, whatever that is. I think that's, you know, I don't have any kids myself. I think all my interns are my kids. And I really care about them, and I want them to be successful. And when I see that they are doing something that they enjoy and being able to make a living at it and being successful, that's my proud mama moment.
Yeah, Leslie Janica, she has done yeoman's work as the coordinator of the KEAMI program. Leslie, listen, you are very much a deserved unsung hero. You epitomize what this segment is all about, and really appreciate you taking time to join me this morning. Congratulations again, and keep up the wonderful work.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Leslie Janica, this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. I'm back in 30 seconds right after this word from Claiborne.
Catholic boy, one of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win grade ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretary. A six-time graded stakes winner from ages 2 to 4, he was the fastest three-year-old of his crop over 10 furlongs. In foal to Catholic Boy, the Dam of Swiss Skydiver sold for $950,000. Dual surface grade one winner Catholic Boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Well, it is such a privilege every single time I host those Unsung Hero segments to bring you those types of stories. Our sport absolutely filled with unsung heroes like Leslie. If you do know somebody that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in our sport, so many of you have already done this, nominate them today by emailing their story directly to me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my best to recognize them during these Unsung Hero segments in the weeks and the months ahead. When I come back, I'm going to turn my attention to Pimlico. Big day there. I'll welcome in Naomi Tucker, who is the Pimlico handicapper. She will tell you all about the big stakes races on that Saturday afternoon program. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Championship racing is at legendary Pimlico Racecourse. Watch and wager as Maryland's best compete in a Saturday Summer Stakes campaign worth nearly $1.5 million in purses. July 24th features the $200,000 Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup. July 31st features three match series stakes races worth $300,000. And August 21st is a salute to all things Maryland at the Maryland Pride Maryland Strong Celebration. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a regular post time of 12:40 p.m. Visit the track or catch the live stream at pimlico.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. This week's report highlights some long-awaited positive news for racing fans in the United States as it pertains to Woodbine. With lucrative stakes races approaching and travel restrictions loosening, Woodbine Entertainment is ready to welcome participants from the U.S. to Woodbine Racetrack. As of August 9th, Canada will begin allowing entry to American citizens and permanent residents who are currently residing in the U.S. and have been fully vaccinated at least 14 days prior to entering Canada for non-essential travel. August and September mark the richest months of racing during the 2021 Woodbine Thoroughbred season, with more than $8 million in stakes to be contested, plus additional world-class racing opportunities. A total of 15 graded stakes, including five Grade 1 events, will be contested through August and September. Horsemen can find a complete stakes schedule at woodbine.com. With this significant part of the racing season nearing, all owners, trainers, and jockeys from the U.S. should familiarize themselves with the new Canada border measures ahead of its reopening on August 9th. Any individual coming from outside Canada seeking immediate access to Woodbine Racetrack will be permitted if a quarantine exemption is granted and a negative COVID-19 test is provided. Those individuals will then be enrolled in Woodbine's enhanced screening program. Participants can find all relevant racing information and contact information by visiting woodbine.com/horsepeople. The other big announcement from Woodbine this week involves top veteran jockeys Sean Bridgemahan and Antonio Gallardo, who have both shifted their tack to Woodbine for the 2021 season. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Big ten for home now. Red Ball still the one to catch. But up on the outside, here's Paradise Creek. That's the pounce. Paradise Creek on the outside, just over a confident hand ride up to Red Call. They're coming to the final bow on Paradise Creek. Takes the lead and draws off at will from Red Call. Beneficial is running on in third, but Paradise Creek is headed to the wire, bounding away from the field. Red Call second and Beneficial. Paradise Creek, each stride moves them closer to the Grass Championship. 159 and 3.
How about that little flashback for you? The 1994 running of the Washington, D.C. International, the great Paradise Creek. Remember him getting the victory that day? There were so many good horses that have competed in that particular race, and it has gone through plenty of changes over the years. And today we celebrate with the next renewal of what promises to be a spectacular race, the Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup, 1 mile this year on the turf course at Pimlico. It is part of a 9-race program featuring 4 stakes races, and I now welcome in Naomi Tucker, who is the analyst and handicapper at Pimlico, does a fantastic job. Naomi, good morning.
Oh, you're very kind, Mike. Good morning. How are you doing?
Things are good here. Happy Pimlico Saturday. It's a big day at Pimlico today.
It really is. Yeah, you already mentioned it. Four stakes races on the card. We have nine races in total. Of course, highlighted by the Grade 3. So, you know, a graded stakes race at Pimlico, aside from, of course, the normal Preakness meet. We're in an extended Preakness meet here. So very, very exciting. Haven't seen any of the scratches yet, so that's my only caveat here, because I really hope that the field holds together in that Grade 3 BWI International Turf Cup, because I do believe I spoke with Michael Sidham yesterday, and they're going to aim for the stakes at Colonial with Pixelate. That's what he was thinking. Now, I haven't seen any scratches yet, so kind of, you know, still sort of wait and see, but I'm assuming that they'll go to Colonial with Pixelate instead of our future race, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, because Pixelate, you know, certainly, if not the one to beat, certainly one of the ones to beat in there. It's a pretty well-balanced field of six that was entered into that Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup this year. Pixelate really strong, but if he comes out, you still have a competitive group and, again, a well-balanced field in there.
Absolutely. I'm so much looking forward to it. Even with Pixelate in, I was actually going to try and beat him with Field Pass on the rail. Of course, Michael Maker was the trainer with the most wins during Preakness weekend. He always cleans up at Pimlico, really, really gets his horse ready. Had a three-timer, I think, yesterday at Saratoga, so clearly his barn is firing just fine. And I like Field Pass. I think he gets the much-needed class relief for him here in his last three races. Two great ones he ran in, and then the Grade 2 Wise Dan, where he ran within two lengths of set piece. And I thought that was an interesting, because that's how the form ties back in with Ramsey Solution, the Wesley Ward runner on the outside, who ran within four lengths of set piece last time out in a stake at Churchill Downs. So I'm going to go with the rail horse here. Very much looking forward to seeing Victor Carrasco, maybe, you know, trying to be aggressive with him. I think this is a four-year-old colt that has the speed to do so. And we've seen Victor Carrasco give some peaches of rides up front, just, you know, getting settled, getting a horse to relax, clicking off those right fractions. I'm hoping he can do it again with Field Pass.
Did you tell Mike Stidham you were planning on betting against his horse?
I did not. I'm sure actually that our morning line odds maker, Keith Fuster, would have disagreed with me. We kind of discussed this race a little bit yesterday, and he was very much a Pixelate fan. So when I told him that he might not be running, he was very upset. And we know that if I have to rank handicappers at our track, Keith certainly takes the cake.
Naomi, I mentioned during my introduction that this race is so steeped in history, and it has gone through changes, and this year's renewal is not on par necessarily with some of those historic runnings that we've seen, but the folks at the Maryland Jockey Club hoping that one day we could see this race return to its prominence, because back in the day, the Washington, D.C. International, this was the race, one of the big premier turf races in the country. You look at it's going back to, what, the 1960s with Fort Marcy, and then you had Dahlia and McDermott and Van Landingham. I mean, all along, the list goes on and on. We heard Paradise Creek earlier. This race has so much history, and I would love to see it return to its prominence again.
No, you're completely right there. Actually, me and the other analyst that we have at Pimlico Racecourse, Callie Francois, we were looking up some of the historical facts for the Baltimore-Washington International. It was the first race in the U.S. open to international runners, which was unprecedented in 1952. The Mighty Kelso had one win and 3 seconds in there, and even Lester Piggott and Eddie Acaro made appearances in this race, legendary jockeys. So what a race. And yes, perhaps it isn't as prominent today as it was back then, but, you know, times change, and hopefully we can, you know, keep making sure that this race is remembered for all the legends that have participated in it.
Well, that's what makes Naomi Tucker so good at her job. She is not just in tune with what's happening today, but also the history of the sport as well. And she is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Naomi, let's talk about the other stakes races on the program today, the three complimentary stakes to that Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup. I'll let you kick it off. Go anywhere you want with those three stakes.
Oh, we'll just go in chronological order then. I'm flicking through the PPs here. Let's start with the Bald Eagle Derby. Of course, a distance, mile and a half on the turf, the same distance as the Epsom Derby. A distance that none of the runners in here, none of the three-year-olds have gone before. Now, in the opposite of, for example, in Europe, we do see a lot of these three-year-olds prep with races at, you know, a mile and a quarter, that kind of distance to see how they might fare. Now, unfortunately, the majority in this field have not gone that far. I'd say Wooten Asset, the number five for Graham Motion, probably the only one that's gone a mile and an eighth. But I ended up landing on experience towards the outside for trainer Jonathan Thomas. His debut race was very decent. So was he a question of how much will he improve? But when you're looking at such an increase in distance, and there isn't that much distance form to go on, I start looking at pedigrees. And, well, this one is bred to go the distance. His dam was a Delmar Oaks victress, of course, mile and eight. But she's been a terrific producer. He's a half to a grade three winner and multiple grade one placed horse in just as well, who did extremely well over this exact distance in the grade one Northern Dancer at Woodbine. And he's also closely related to four graded stakes winners on grass. So if anyone's bred to relish the grass and a mile and a half, it's this very unexposed and I guess unexperienced and, you know, not really on par with his name, experience, horse coming in here. But I'm going to give him the slight edge over Wooten Asset for trainer Graham Motion, who is, you know, much more experienced, French bred, second run on today after 216 days off. I think he's going to come on from that run in the grade three Quint. So I feel like he's kind of the experienced horse. And then, of course, you have Indian Lake in there for trainer Jamie Ness, who did terrifically well in the Sussex, where he actually couldn't get out until, you know, the last furlong of the race. It really came with a tremendous turn of foot, the kind of turn of foot that we love seeing on the grass. That was 7.5 furlongs, so very much a distance question. I was trying to see if I could find Jamie Ness, but unfortunately he wasn't at the track yesterday. So just see what he's thinking. But obviously you wouldn't place him here if you didn't think that this horse could stay the distance. And he's by Daredevil, of course, Daredevil, Oaks winning sire. Interesting to see how that horse will fare. And then race four is the Sensible Lady Turf Dash, opposite, 5 furlongs on the turf for the ladies. Fillies and mares, the three-year-olds and up. I'm very much a fan of the number five, Golden Can, there for Hassan Alamri. She wasn't aggressively ridden out the gate last time out, but she was just kind of allowed to use her natural clip to settle behind the leader before sort of getting down to business. I think she's going to allow some of the other species to kind of go forward and then come with a run. Now, this is, of course, her first try at stakes level, so it's going to be a step up for her. But I kind of, you know, I like her in this, but I loved what I saw from her on her last two turf efforts, which were, you know, two winning efforts. And then race number six is the Big Dreyfus. Actually, fun fact, that race is named after the old hunter of Georgianne Hale, the VP of racing here. Apparently, you know, she had him a long time ago. She showed me a picture, it was a black and white picture, and the former racing secretary, Chris Mertz, named a race after him for her, which was just super nice. So that's cool. A mile and eighth on the turf. I landed on the number two, Counterparty Risk, which is, you know, the pick that everyone's going to go with. I'm not being creative here at all. This is a Chad Brown runner. She's facing a lot less tough competition than she's faced in the grade three Eton Town. There were a couple of graded stakes winners in that race. She bested Xan Teak, who we last saw at Pimlico winning, who we saw before that winning the Dali at Pimlico, and that was also Crystal Cliff, was like sort of second by, I think, a nose that day in the Dahlia as well. So those were solid runners in there. And she's going to take all the money. She's going to be one of the best turf riders on board in Fergal Lynch. So I'm not creative there, but I find it hard to see past the Chad Brown runner. So I think that's all. That's all the stakes.
Yeah, that's all the stakes, and you did a wonderful job walking through them and talking about some of the major players. Naomi, when you sit down and you start thinking about playing a day like this, where you have so much action, so many big races, how do you like it? Are you an exacta, trifecta type of person? Are you more of a pick three, pick four type of person? How do you like to play them?
So I'm actually neither. I'm very European when it comes to my wagering. I create tickets and I sometimes play them as well myself, but I prefer that if I have a really strong opinion in a race, especially if it's a bit of a good price or I like the value I'm getting, I bet them to win. And that's such a British thing to do as well. I started out in horse racing in England. That's kind of what you do. We bet on the nose, as they say. We bet them to hit the wire first, as simple as it comes. I think it's very tricky to be correct in, for example, 5 or 6 race sequences. And it's hard enough to just pick a winner, so I'm going to stick with doing that. Now, sometimes that means you don't get value like you would get with an exacta or a trifecta. I do like sometimes playing an exacta box if there's a heavy favorite that I can't see past, to create some form of value in that race with using horses underneath that have a better price and then I think it's got a very, very good chance of placing second.
Well, there you have it. Naomi Tucker, just bet them on the nose, as they say, and yeah. Bet to win and go to the bank and cash in your tickets after that. But Naomi, listen, really appreciate the visit this morning. 9 races on the card at Pimlico and that big grade 3. Going to be a great day at Old Hilltop. So enjoy the day, Naomi, and thanks for taking the time this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome, and thank you as well. Let's hope it's a big day once again.
All right, good luck. Naomi Tucker here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. By the way, I forgot to mention that call you heard of Paradise Creek winning the DC International in 1994, that was Dave Rodman, the voice of Maryland Racing. That was back in 1994. Dave is still calling races there, does a fantastic job. And, boy, great to hear his voice all the way back in 94, and great to hear him. And you'll hear him later today at Pimlico as well, calling all those big races today. When I come back, I'll get you set for hour number 3, and I'll tell you about some big news coming out of Ellis Park on this Saturday afternoon. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear. The vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's GetVaccineAnswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
And now, an important message from Jerry Rice.
As a career wide receiver, I've been hit hard. But no training nor practice prepared us for the devastation of COVID-19. Thankfully, there is hope. Even with multiple vaccines available, we still have to work together until everyone is safe. We all win when we unite to prevent.
For more information, visit unitetoprevent.org.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, how about this? The Kentucky HBPA College Day is back at Ellis Park this Sunday. That's tomorrow, after a COVID-forced year-long hiatus last year. They couldn't do it last year because of COVID, but it is back tomorrow. Full-time college students can enter a drawing with it to win an iPad mini or a $1,000 scholarship after each of Sunday's races at Ellis Park. You just need to bring your valid college ID or letter of admission that's required to register. And how about this? The Kentucky HBPA, which of course represents racehorse owners and trainers at the state's five thoroughbred tracks, is sponsoring the iPad mini giveaway and is teaming with Ellis Park for the $1,000 scholarship. So thanks to them. Should be a huge day at Ellis Park tomorrow with the return of Kentucky HBPA College Day. So looking forward to that. Poll question today, more of a question of the day, but so many of you taking time to weigh in, I really appreciate that. Keep the responses coming. If you could choose one jockey and one trainer to hang out with for a day, who would you pick? You know, this is a question I like to ask some of the trainers when I have them on my weekly trainer talk show, which you can catch every Wednesday at 6 Eastern and podcast at horseracingradio.net. It's presented by Fasig Tipton. But I like to ask trainers that question. If you could spend the day with one trainer, past or present, pick their brain, have lunch, have dinner, watch them do their thing, who would it be? And the answers are all over the map. And they're so creative. And that's why I love to ask that on almost every show. So I'm asking you, if you could choose one jockey and one trainer to hang out with for a day, who would you pick? And got a response here, the latest one from Gene, saying Steve Cawthon and Mark Cassie. Steve Cawthon getting a lot of love in this particular poll question. And you can see why. I mean, the kid, right? Everything that he accomplished at a very young age and the Triple Crown unaffirmed. We have had the privilege of visiting with Steve Cawthon on many occasions here on the network. He's come into our studio, and to hear him tell his stories and talk about, you know, all of the things that he was able to accomplish and how he did it is just absolutely fantastic. All right, well, that's going to do it for the first 2 hours of today's show, but I am far from done here this morning. Hour three begins momentarily with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation this week with Louis Saez and his agent, Kieran McLaughlin. Coming up at 10:25, you'll hear Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland, and then I'll wrap up the show by going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela at 10:40. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening at horseracingradio.net and Sirius 219 XM 201. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Poet's Word is getting on terms. Chris Lotion on the far side. Poet's Word on the near side. They're practicing together now. They fight tooth and nail up to the line. And Poet's Word is edging ahead and won it. Poet's Word won the King George.
Starship Jubilee has gone right to the front. Involuntary coming up to second. And on the outside late is Stormy Victoria. But Eureka Rosa da Silva is romping away with the Nassau Stakes, and Starship Jubilee will score by about three lengths.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They come for home. Gabriel Charles Extreme outside. Suddenly, Midnight Storm did not go on, and it's Gabriel Charles just sweeping right on by 2020 Vision, but Gabriel Charles in a dominating performance. Gabriel Charles and Mike Smith romping home in the Eddie Reed.
Songbird has repelled Karina Mia. Songbird has opened up a three-length lead. Karina Mia has been left behind. Songbird has whistled past the graveyard of champions, winning the Coaching Club American Oaks.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour three of the Equine Forum, barreling forward. If you missed any portion of the first couple of hours, well, that's easy. All you have to do is head back to our website and check out the podcast at your leisure. It'll be posted shortly after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern Time this morning. My conversation with Gary Falter from OwnerView with that big announcement of the in-person conference coming up Breeders' Cup week at Del Mar. My conversation with Tom Law from the Saratoga Special previewing the big races at Saratoga today. Nancy LaSala from the PDJF. Next Saturday will be a day to support PDJF and remember disabled riders. Keep that in mind as you work through the upcoming week. Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. Leslie Janica, the coordinator with Kimi, was with me, did a fantastic job. She is so deserving of that particular honor. And Naomi Tucker, a short time ago, handicapping the big races at Pimlico. So we've covered a lot of ground over the course of the first 2 hours of the program. Going to continue to do so here in hour number three. We have in the room with Sean Clancy as he sits down with Saratoga's leading rider, Louis Saez, and his agent, Karen McLaughlin. That's coming your way momentarily. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, which is always a popular segment. We launched that one at the beginning of the year, and it's just been so many people have chimed in and told us how much they enjoy Kurt's stories. And then the Road to the Breeders' Cup, presented by Breeders' Cup. That comes up at 10:40. I welcome in Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela, who will saddle United in today's Eddie Reed at Del Mar. Haven't gotten a chance to talk about those races yet. We did talk about Saratoga. We talked about Pimlico. I'll talk about Del Mar with Richard Mandela at the end of the show. But those races today, the Eddie Reed, the San Clemente, those two races are really strong, but the whole card there today, as you might expect, is a strong program. If United can get the victory today, he'll, of course, win the race in consecutive years. He's looking to become just the fifth horse ever to do so, to win multiple renewals of the Eddie Reed, and the first horse to do it since Acclamation pulled it off in 2011 and 2012. So looking forward to that conversation coming up with Richard. Of course, we'll look back on some of his other wins in the Eddie Reed. A horse like Cotijan comes to mind, for example. We'll also talk to him about some of his Breeders' Cup wins. 9-time Breeders' Cup winning trainer. He has sat down with me on multiple occasions in the past and looked back on some of those days, but I'll kind of touch on some of those with him in that conversation coming up at 10:40 Eastern. So an awful lot of things to get to. Don't forget that if you want to check out any of our shows throughout the week, they're all there for you via podcast on our site. You can listen at your leisure. So if you don't catch them live during the week, go back and treat yourself. You can listen to my interview with all of the top trainers on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. That's a Wednesday afternoon feature at 6 Eastern. Thursdays, the Brisnet.com call-in show at 6 o'clock Eastern. That's also podcast there. And on Friday, the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts, where Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman handicap all the big races coming up each and every weekend. And that is available via podcast on our website right now as well. So head over there, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcast from. All right. Time now to take you in the room with my man, Sean Clancy.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Luis Saez. Having a great start to Saratoga. He's got to feel good to get off to a great start.
Yeah, I feel very, very grateful to be here, especially in Saratoga. What a wonderful place to be in. Well, thanks God, we're doing great. My agent been working pretty hard. Trainers and owners give me the opportunity. Horses been running great, so we're blessed to be here.
Yeah, what's it like? You got a new agent, Kieran McLaughlin, this year. How different is it? And do you miss Richard DePass wandering around here?
Richie's what a wonderful person. He teach me a lot of good stuff. I really miss him a lot. He's like my family. But he leave me with a good hand, Kieran, and I'm so glad to be with him. He's like part of my family, and well, we're doing great, so everything is great.
When you were growing up in Panama, when did you think I'm going to be a jockey? Was that some early on, or your family into it? How'd you get into being a jockey?
Yeah, early on when I was there. We used to ride horses in the street. And, well, I had a feeling like one day I really want to ride racing. But I was a little scared because over there we don't have TV, so we don't know how race it was. I thought the races was on the street in Panama. So So I got no idea. So when I came to the track in Panama and I see the races, that was my everything.
Yeah, better than the street, I guess. What's street racing like?
Yeah, street race, like running in the street, like where the car's going, that's where we used to race. It was pretty dangerous. But now we're here, so we're so glad to be here.
Yeah, you've come a long way from street racing in Panama to Saratoga, but it's an amazing journey.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing journey. I'm really grateful to be here.
And when you came to America, what was that like? I mean, it had to be big. I mean, you rode in Panama, I guess, first, and then came to America. What was that like? I mean, it had to be a big opportunity, but a big risk, right?
Yeah, it was a big risk, a big opportunity for me. That was my dream, to come to America. And that day when I first rode my first horse in Florida, it was like the best thing ever. And, well, it was not easy. When we started, it was pretty tough. Like, I know a lot of jockeys have. But after that, we start doing great, and people, you know, give me the opportunity and horses. And, well, we're here now. So we're so blessed to be here.
And you started at Calder. What was it like at Calder? I mean, you've kind of got you going at Calder. Who's the trainer to help you out, or who was kind of influential?
Yeah, I remember that Billy White used to help me. I used to have my agent was Peter Wright in that time. And Marty Wilson was the kid. You know, he gave me a good horses to get going. And after that, Gil Greyer was my agent, and that was when we do the record in Calder. So we did pretty great. So we're so blessed, you know.
And then they moved to New York. Talk me through that. I mean, it had to be a big move to try New York.
Yeah, it was a big move. And then Gil Greyer put me with Richard DePaz, and Richard bring me to New York. And it was a little bit tough. New York is the bigger deal, you know. But we start there and we start winning races, so that's all that matter.
Yeah, that's in this game, that's all that matters, right? And was there a moment when you got to New York, you think, wow, I can make it here? Was there a race or a horse or a trainer that you said, wow, I'm gonna be able to make it here?
Yeah, it was. We started working pretty hard every day, showing off to the track, try to hustling, you know, horses, and then we start doing great, and people give me opportunities. And I remember first year we came to Saratoga, we win the travel. It was a big stuff happened to us, and now, you know, more people know us and they give me more opportunity.
Yeah, Wayne Lucas will take charge. Take me through that moment when you win the Traverse. That had to be, I mean, from a kid in Panama racing in the streets to win the Traverse, had to be some moment, some experience.
Oh, yeah, it was a big moment when we win the Traverse. Of course, the coach, Wayne Lucas, gave me the opportunity. And I remember I used to watch his replay, like, over and over, try to see if we can win the race. And, well, we learn about that, and we get it. We win that big race, and that was one of the biggest day in our life.
Yeah, no question. And then take me to this year. You win the Belmont Stakes with the Central Quality. That had the same feeling, or how different is it over the years? I mean, did they change, or the same feeling?
Oh, it was big. My family was there, my daughter, my wife, everybody was there. And, you know, that's like my dream all the time, win the bigger races of the track, like Belmont Stakes, Florida Derby, Kentucky Derby, Traverse. And, well, we have some, so we feel good about that.
Yeah, and then you're out here every day looking for another one, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. We're here every day trying to get, you know, and the horses, trying to know the horses in the morning. And we're so happy. We enjoy to be here.
What's the toughest part about being a jockey?
Toughest part, and, well, toughest part is when you don't ride the good horses and you're not winning races. But it's fine. We love what we do. If we win, we're fine. If we know, it's okay. We always have, like, another chance tomorrow. So that's great.
And you deal with that okay? I mean, I know when I rode races, I'd get when you're not winning races, you kind of get down on yourself. Or are you okay doing it? I mean, how's your confidence level? You stay confident all the time?
Yeah, I stay confident. When in the beginning, you know, it's a little bit tough, especially when you compete with a lot of jockeys and everybody's waiting. But after, you know, after years, you handle them pretty well, and we know we have a chat. The main thing is go home safe and, well, try to look for another day.
And who were your heroes growing up? I mean, were jockeys out there that you looked up to, that you wanted to be like? I mean, you watched, kind of emulate? Who were they?
Well, yeah, Cornelio Velasquez.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, he was one of my biggest dreams. Lafitte Bincay.
Of course.
Yes. And, of course, Gary Gomez. That was the jockey that I always want to be like him one day.
Yeah, he had some great finish, strong in the finish, right? Is that something you try to emulate, I guess?
Yeah, that's what it was. It caught my attention when he all the time rode his horses to the end and pretty strong.
Right, sure. Yeah, those guys are the greatest. And Lafitte, too. I mean, and especially coming from where you came from, I guess, watching their careers and trying to be like that.
Be like that, yeah. That's my dream.
Who's the toughest guy to get by now in a finish? You turn for home and you say, "Oh God, this, you know, who's the toughest guy to ride against?"
Well, everybody's pretty good here. Everybody's pretty good here, but yeah, they have some jockey that you really have to ride pretty hard to beat him, like Joel, Ira, Javier, Johnny. All those guys, they're pretty tough to get by.
Oh, it's a deep colony here for sure. I mean, every guy's good. And for you to compete, I mean, you must have these moments like, wow, I'm in New York competing with these guys. It's got to feel an amazing accomplishment, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's make me feel pretty good to be here. You know, I never imagined I'm going to be here and have my agent like Karen and ride the horses that we're riding. Something that I never imagined. I couldn't believe.
And you're right at the top for leading jockey at Saratoga. Is that something you think about or a goal of yours, trying to be champion jockey at Saratoga? I mean, this is the premier meet.
Of course, everybody has that dream. Everybody want to be the champion jockey. But let's see. We keep doing what we're doing and trying and see what happens. I know it's pretty tough, but nothing is impossible.
Oh, you've proved that, right? You can get out of street racing in Panama and all the way to New York, right? That's the story of your life, I guess, right?
Definitely. Yes, thank you.
Were there any moments when you came to America, you're in Florida, you get homesick or think, man, what am I doing here? Or do you ever have those times when, like, you're questioning the decision to kind of come here and, you know, the confidence level, same thing like that? I mean, was that tough?
Yeah, sometimes, but not really. We enjoy what we're doing here, and we love horse racing. We love the animals, and we are blessed to be here. That's what I feel.
Sure. Yeah. If you weren't a jockey, what would you be?
I don't know. Maybe farmer. Yeah.
I usually say baseball player. All baseball player. All these guys. You know, I just didn't grow, right?
Yeah, maybe farmer. That's my dad is, and maybe that's the way I look her. So, but I'm great to. I'm so glad to be here.
And what would it mean to Central Quality, another Travers on the on your resume? How would that look?
Oh, that means a lot to me. And, yeah, I got a lot of confidence with him. He's a pretty nice horse. He always want to win. So we're so glad to be on there, really. Nice horse.
What was it like first time you got on him? You breeze him probably in the morning? I mean, did you think automatically, wow, this is a nice horse? Or what was that like?
No, we rode it first time in Keeneland. And I remember Mr. Karen told me it was a nice horse. And Brad told me he run all day, so when we rode it that day, I had a feeling like he was gonna be one of the bigger horses in the year, in this game. So he proving.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was a little bit unlucky in the Derby when we got bothered right there. After that, he run his race, but not the same. But he's always trying.
Yeah, that Derby experience was probably right off the... I mean, you break out of the gate and kind of, like, quickly you think, man, this isn't going well, right?
Yeah, they really bothered us right there, but that's the game, you know. Nothing is perfect, so we have to keep trying.
That's the name of the game, keep trying. That's Jockey Luis Saez making it big in New York.
Thank you so much.
As I just finished with Jockey Luis Saez's agent right here, Kieran McLaughlin, no more training horses, now an agent. What's that like?
Oh, it's great. We're doing very well, and he's a great person to work with and a great jockey. So we're thankful for all the supporters and owners and trainers giving us live horses. But it's fun. I get to come out every day and see my friends and stay involved.
Yeah, and less headaches, I guess, from then training horses.
Yes, I mean, I miss sometimes the quality horses to train and some of the people. But like I said, I get to stay in touch with a lot of racing managers and owners. And it's great without all the aggravations.
And what's it like working with a young guy, Louis, trying to get going? I mean, he's not trying to get going. He's going. What's that like? I mean, it's got to be a fun kind of experience for both you guys.
Yes, it's great because he's a top rider. I'm just trying to keep him up there and on top and get the right horses to ride. So it's a lot of fun, and he's a great guy with a wife and three daughters, and it's fun. I don't have to worry about where he is or what he's doing because he's great and does everything properly.
Do you critique his rides?
Never. I don't say anything. He's a great rider and he knows what to do. I critique myself sometimes for putting him on bad horses, but
yeah, it's got to be fun though, the challenge of getting rides, right? I mean, I know we're all kind of racetrackers and like the competition, right? So you still have that. You got to feed that flame still.
Yes, it's great to be competitive and watch. I watch every race now. I used to only watch one a day, but I'm watching 10 a day now, and he just puts the horses in the right spot, and if he has the horse, they get there.
And you must recognize when a trainer's, spinning you around or kind of not giving you the call, right? I mean, he's got to use lines you used, right? I mean, is that like Melvin's like, wait a minute, I used that line.
I was the easiest to deal with. I was very easy to deal with. But it's sometimes, certain trainers are tougher than others. But for the most part, I have no issues with it. It's going very well.
I was spinning a guy once, and I said, man, I just don't know what to tell the other guy. I gave him the call. He said, tell him the same thing you told me last week. I said, that'll work.
Yes, exactly. It's tough trying to pick the right horses.
Yeah, that's got to be the toughest part, right? Just trying to pick the right ones.
Yeah, it's nice that he's in demand.
For sure, yeah. It'd be a lot harder if he wasn't in demand, right?
Yes, it's tough just to, try when you don't have the product. But we're very live, and he's a great rider, so it's nice to be in demand.
Sure. And Richard DePass, did he give you any advice or call you up and say, what are you doing?
I speak to him often and stay in touch with him. He's a great guy, and he's enjoying life, and I'm glad it's all worked out for all three of us.
Yeah, it couldn't have worked out better. I mean, you probably needed a change, and Richard needed a change, and of course, your jockey, he just wants to win races and keep going, right?
Exactly. That's it. So hopefully we can keep it going.
All right, that's Kieran McLaughlin, Jack's agent of the stars here.
Yeah, he's turned into that. Kieran had such a successful training career and now associated with jockey Luis Saez, and they find themselves at the top of the standings here at Saratoga in the early going. But yet you have to think, I know there's a lot of tremendous riders in that colony. You think about the Ortiz brothers and Johnny V and Javier Castellano, and the litany goes on. But Luis Saez has proven that he can show up on a big day, in a big race, in a big moment. He's proven that he can ride day in and day out. He's been doing it for a very long time. And I'm not sure if we look at Luis Saez as being one of the... I mean, I think he's earned the title of elite rider in this sport. But when you think about the elite riders, and you think names that come to mind are Mike Smith, Johnny V, the Ortizes, right? I mean, those are the names that pop into your head immediately. Flavien Prat. But I think Luis Saez has to be in that conversation. I'm just not sure we always think about Luis in our first few jockeys that we would name. But he deserves to be. And as good of a rider as Luis Saez is, he is equally as good of a person, if not better. And that is a compliment that's been paid to people like Johnny V and to Ramon Dominguez over the years. And I think that those guys would tell you that, yeah, that the riding titles and the purses and the big wins are important, but being referred to by their peers, by people that know them well, as a truly good person, good family man, is maybe more important than all those titles. And Louis is certainly one of those. And really appreciate him taking the time with Sean Clancy. Again, a portion of the proceeds from that segment donated back to the PDJF. If you'd like to contribute and be part of that as a sponsor, all you have to do is email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and we will get you set up and we'll start helping to raise money and awareness for the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund through those weekly In the Room segments with Sean Clancy. If you missed any of his visits and conversations, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. If you go to the Shows tab at the top of the page, there is a special In the Room section that you can listen to every single one Sean has ever done. And there have been some unbelievable conversations, just like the one you just heard. And you can do it through our website, horseracingradio.net. I'm back right after this word from My Racehorse.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for the use of offering regulations. Part of offering statement, qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 Regulation A.
All right, still to come in a busy third hour of the program, you're going to hear Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history. We are just 5 or 6 minutes away from that segment, and then I'll take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup. I will welcome in Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela coming up at 10:40. All of that in the second half of this third hour of the program. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. This weekend's races feature the Grade 2 Nassau Stakes for fillies and mares, 4-year-olds and up, going 1 mile on the turf course. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in 5 countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose 2-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving, and American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first 2 seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
It is Sky Beauty now who's beginning to get away. Mike Smith takes a peek back for the competition. And it is Sky Beauty now in front by 3 with a furlong to run here. Future Pretense is mounting a late challenge on the outside. Now Smith resorts to the whip on Sky Beauty. Future Pretense looking for a big upset. Sky Beauty and Future Pretense. And Sky Beauty holds to win by a half length. Future Pretense was a surprise second. And farther back, Silky Feather was third.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. Happy to have you along for the ride with me here this morning. That was Tom Durkin with the call of the 1993 Coaching Club American Oaks Sky Beauty, getting the victory over a fast-closing Future Pretense. It was 1 year before Sky Beauty would go on to win her Eclipse Award as the champion older mare. That was in 1994. Of course, she went on to be inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011. She was trained by Hall of Fame trainer Alan Jerkins, who, of course, is no longer with us, trained nearly 4,000 winners, 3,859 winners. He himself inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1975. Both Sky Beauty and Alan Jerkins contributing so much to the history of thoroughbred racing, as does Kurt Becker, as he takes another look at racing history with this stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. Calumet Farm of Lexington, Kentucky, built its reputation in the thoroughbred industry on the strength of remarkable success in the American Triple Crown Series. There were 8 Kentucky Derby winners, 2 Triple Crown winners, and 11 horses inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame. But the Coaching Club American Oaks, a Grade 1 race for 3-year-old fillies, which goes to the post today at Saratoga Racecourse in upstate New York at 1 1/8 miles, has a history which reminds us that Calumet Farm also campaigned some tremendous fillies. The Coaching Club American Oaks is a race which dates to 1917. The race began at Belmont Park, was held briefly in the 1960s at Aqueduct Racetrack, then returned to Belmont before relocating in 2010 to Saratoga. As for the name of the race, well, to qualify for membership in the New York Coaching Club, one had to demonstrate the ability to handle a coach in 4. That is to say, one had to be able to command and steer 4 horses pulling a coach by use of a single set of reins. The inaugural event in 1917 was run as a handicap at 9 furlongs. The second edition in 1918 was held at 10 furlongs and was also run under handicap conditions. And with the third edition in 1919, the distance would be increased to 11 furlongs and the race would be officially designated as the Coaching Club American Oaks, having been developed into a longer distance race to emulate the English Oaks. While the race today is contested at 1 1/8 miles, the record 6 editions of the Coaching Club American Oaks won by Calumet Farm from 1944 through 1979 came at distances of 1 1/4 miles, 1 3/8 miles, and 1 1/2 miles. The first of the group to win was Twilight Tear, a filly so good as a 3-year-old in 1944 that she would finish the season as Horse of the Year, receiving 121 of the 141 ballots cast. Her stablemate, Pensive, won the Kentucky Derby and Preakness, but she was a perfect 3-for-3 against him and rattled off a string of 11 consecutive wins. The Coaching Club American Oaks would be one of her victories against her own age and gender that summer. Up next was Wistful, who won the race in 1949, and then Real Delight, who won in 1952. Both fillies completed impressive triples by winning the Kentucky Oaks and the Black Eyed Susan prior to winning the Coaching Club American Oaks. And in 1958, A Glitter, a granddaughter of Twilight Tear, gave Calumet its 4th victory in the prestigious event. It would be nearly 20 years before Calumet would strike again, but the wait would be worth it. Our Mims, trained by John Veach, stepped onto the Belmont Park racing surface on July 2, 1977, as the 5th betting choice in the Coaching Club American Oaks. The filly was a great-granddaughter of 1952 winner Real Delight, and she would do her great-grandmother proud. Chick Anderson gives us the call.
They're coming to the head of the stretch. Harvest Girl and Our Mims now making the pace together, and Our Mims has it as they pass the quarter pole by 1 length. Harvest Girl holding on in 2nd. Then on the outside, Road Princess is 3rd, trying to gain on the first 2, Cum Laude Lari in 4th. Through the stretch, it's Our Mims, and she holds on by 3. Road Princess is 2nd, 1, Cum Laude Lari driving 3rd. Thea is on the outside also. Coming to the wire, Our Mims holding on.
Earning her 2nd stakes victory of the year, Our Mims withstood a claim of foul and paid nearly $20 in winning the Coaching Club American Oaks under jockey George Velasquez. The win made Calumet Farm the first owner ever to win 5 editions of the race. Her victory also came just 1 week after her half-brother, a 2-year-old named Alidar, had broken his maiden at Belmont by 7 lengths. Calumet's 6th win in the coaching club came in 1979, when Devona Dale won by 8 lengths to score her 8th consecutive stakes win in 6 states. In the process, she completed the so-called Philly Triple Crown by adding the coaching club American Oaks to her prior wins in both the Kentucky Oaks and the Black Eyed Susan. And it also made her only the 5th filly to win the New York Philly Triple Crown, having previously captured the Acorn and the Mother Goose. One member of the press described Devona Dale as a big, long-striding filly who wears no blinkers, no bandages, and is alert and quiet in the saddling area. 6 winners of the Coaching Club American Oaks, still the record among owners, with 3 of those winners eventually being enshrined in Racing's Hall of Fame. In its days as the longest distance race in North America for 3-year-old fillies, no one dominated the Coaching Club American Oaks quite like Calumet Farm. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Another fantastic story. My thanks to Kurt for putting that piece together. He ended it by saying nobody has dominated the Coaching Club American Oaks quite the way Calumet Farm has, at least on the ownership side of things. From a jockey perspective, it has been, well, kind of a four-horse race. Mike Smith, John Velasquez tied at the top with 5 wins apiece. Jorge Velasquez has 4, and Jerry Bailey has 4. Johnny V is aboard the favorite Malathot in today's Coaching Club American Oaks. If he wins with the heavy favorite, then he would stand alone atop that list. Todd Pletcher has dominated the Coaching Club American Oaks like no other trainer has ever done. He has won it 7 times, and if Malathot wins today, it will be 8 for Todd, and he will just continue to add to what is already a Hall of Fame resume, and looking forward to Todd being enshrined into the Hall of Fame later this summer, next month. You look at his wins in this race, his very first one coming in 2001. Tweedside was the horse. Johnny V was the jockey. Eugene Melnick, the owner. Tweedside was his very first win in there. He would come back 3 years later with the great A Shadow. John Velasquez, also aboard. That was in 2004. 2007, it was Octave. Johnny V aboard. Are you seeing a pattern here? 2010, Devil May Care. The jockey, John Velasquez. How about that? 2013, Todd won it again with Princess of Silmar. 2014, Stop Charging Maria. Both of those horses not ridden by John Velasquez. Maybe that's the biggest upset. It was Javier Castellano, the Hall of Famer, aboard those two horses. And then in 2015, Todd's most recent win came via disqualification. Carolina, under John Velasquez, getting the victory. So of his 7 wins in the race, 5 have been ridden by Johnny V, the other 2 by Javier Castellano. And you say, okay, well, that's no surprise, because his relationship with those two jockeys, Johnny V in particular, but Javier and Todd had a wonderful run there for many, many years. That relationship very strong. And when you think about a stroll through racing history, that stroll that I just brought you, walking through Todd Pletcher's history in the Coaching Club American Oaks, is pretty special as well. And if he can do it today, that would be win number 8, and it would be really cool to see him pull it off. And he has a very special filly in the undefeated Kentucky Oaks winner. She is 2-5 on the morning line. I told you earlier that Saratoga, as we all know, referred to as the graveyard of champions, the graveyard of favorites, if you will. Well, this meet, that has not been the case. Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and from Briss and from our BrissNet.com call-in show, you can catch him every Thursday on the show, sent out a tweet yesterday, and he pointed out the fact that if you had bet every favorite this month at Saratoga, you would be up for the meeting. You would be ahead. The 40% strike rate is the highest since 2003, and the first time since 2014, then it's even above 36% in July. So the graveyard of favorites not living up to that reputation quite yet, and for Melathot, certainly hoping that that doesn't happen today. But that's a short field of four, race number five on the card because of the short field, but it does have star power. The other horses in that race with Malathot are okay. They're nice fillies. Clairiere, Maracuja, second and third choices respectively in there. Really nice fillies. But Malathot has made both of them look very ordinary earlier this year. And you can see why she's 2-5 on the morning line. All right, when I come back, I am going to welcome in 9-time Breeders' Cup winner, the Hall of Fame trainer, Richard Mandela, who will saddle United, the defending champion, in today's Eddie Reed at Del Mar. That is coming up as we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Racing is back at Colonial Downs July 19th through September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Horsemen will love the big money offered during this year's meet with average purses of $500,000 per day. In addition, maidens will compete for $50,000 and stakes horses will benefit from a beefed-up stakes schedule. Plus, owners are guaranteed at least $1,000 per start with trainers receiving a $300 per start bonus. It's all happening at Colonial Downs July 19th through September 1st.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery was a multiple graded stakes winner at 2, including this victory in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity. At 3, he sizzled in the San Felipe Stakes. Now his progeny are bringing top dollar in the sales ring.
$450,000.
Internet buys $510,000. Thank you.
An exciting young stallion, Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They're a half mile out now in the Breeders' Cup turf, and Louisor threatening to go wire to wire, but Cotijan is uncoiling on the outside. BNBN is moving with him, and here comes the English champ, Opera House, as the field turns for home. Cotijan catapulting as Tarsus is on the outside, and BNBN, those two shoulder to shoulder now as they come to the final furlong. Loser toward the inside. Opera House is done. And Hato, it is BNBN running a brave race today. Cotijan lengthening his stride. And Cotijan is the victor. BNBN was second. And Loser was third. And the cheers for the Americans here. They soundly defeat the Europeans. But the best in the world this afternoon was Cotijan.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. How good was that field in the 1993 Breeders' Cup turf that was won, as you just heard, by Cotijan? Tom Durkin had the call. Fantastic field, and what a renewal. Cotijan lengthening that stride and getting the victory. He would go on to be named Horse of the Year in 1993, and champion grass horse, trained by Richard Mandela, who is now with me to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Richard, not only did Cotijan give you that win in the Breeders' Cup turf that year, he won the Eddie Reed on his way to victory in the turf earlier in the season. And, of course, you're going to be looking for a fourth win in that race later today with the defending champion, United. Appreciate you joining me, my friend.
Nice to be here.
When you hear that call of Cotijan winning the Breeders' Cup turf, what were some of the things that immediately come to mind?
We ran four horses that day. Cotijan in the turf and Phone Chatter in the two-year-old filly Breeders' Cup, and then Memo in the Smile Stake and Region in the Skywalker Stake. and they all four won. That's what brought back memories.
What was it about Cotajan that just made him such a consistent and such a good horse?
He just was that good, and he had such a turn of foot. You know, once we took a few races to get him to relax and do it the way we wanted. But once he figured it out, he'd sit back there and he'd make some kind of last quarter mile.
You know, you had to feel like going into that Breeders' Cup Turf that year that, okay, he wins this. Yes, he's champion grass horse, but horse of the year, I don't know if that was on your radar going into that race, but it was the year that folks will remember Arkong upset Bertrando and everybody else in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and that kind of opened the door. Was that in the back of your mind at all going into the Breeders' Cup Turf?
Well, I had it planned all year long.
It, just like you drew it up on the chalkboard, right?
Yes, right.
Richard Mandela going down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Richard, so he wins, Cotajan wins in 93, wins the Eddie Reed. You come back with another Eddie Reed victory in 2001 with Redditori, and now United last year and looking to pull it off again with United. What are you seeing from him this year going into the race?
He's back feeling pretty sharp. I think he'll run a very good race today. Disappointing his last race. We did find a bruise under his shoe when we shot him a couple of weeks after his last race. So I don't know if it's a good enough excuse, but it's the only one we've got.
Yeah, well, he comes out of the same race that he ran in last year before the Eddie Reed, the Charlie Whittingham. He won it last year. He was fourth this year. As a Hall of Fame trainer, Richard, that has saddled so many unbelievable horses in your career, what are some of the things that you look for in a horse to let you know that, okay, they're sitting on a big effort and I have them where I want them coming into a big race?
Probably to use the words Bobby Frankel used to say is, are they happy?
How do you know?
The smile on their face.
Are there things that you see that let you know that they're where you want them?
Yeah, when you know, anybody's got a dog or a cat or a pet, you know what they're feeling, even though they can't speak to you. And, you know, when we work around these horses every day, we can just tell by body language and that and get a pretty good idea what they're thinking.
Well, the Eddie Reed is a really solid race on that Del Mar program this afternoon. You have Smooth Like Straight, who is the 9-5 morning line favorite from Michael McCarthy, and a pretty well-balanced field after that. But United, the defending champ, is looking to become the fifth horse to win multiple runnings of the Eddie Reed if he can pull it off. How much time, Richard, do you spend looking at the competition in a race like this, or are you solely focused on your horse?
Not too much. I don't want to scare myself.
Yeah. Yeah. What have you seen from Smooth Like Straight when you've watched him run out there?
He is a very good horse, and you know, he's in good form. But I'll keep my horse. I wouldn't trade with anybody.
Do you start thinking, I know you plan out. You know, of course, you planned Cotajan winning Horse of the Year all along. Do you start planning at the beginning of the year and work out a game plan when you're trying to get a horse like United to back to the Breeders' Cup again? Is that something you start at the beginning of the year, or do you just kind of go with the flow as the year progresses?
We've always got ideas in the back of our mind, but you can't get too far ahead of the game or the horses won't follow you. So kind of got to take it race by race, but in the back of your mind, like I say, you have a plan of, if it goes good, we'll do this. If it doesn't go good, we'll back up and do this. And you have to have a plan A, B, C, and D.
Yeah, just like a jockey, trainers have to do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this race is a mile and an eighth, and we've seen them be successful at all different distances. He nearly won the Breeders' Cup Turf back in, 2019 when he was beaten just ahead that year at a mile and a half. What's his best distance, Richard?
I think it's anywhere from a mile and eight to a mile and a half, but it's kind of when he's on his best day, I'd say.
Yeah, well, let's hope he's on his best day later this afternoon in that Eddie Reed. You come back later in the card, race number 10, the Grade 2 San Clemente Stakes with Pizzazz. This is a one-mile turf event. Pizzazz has the inside draw. Tell me a little bit more about Pizzazz.
She's a nice filly. You know, not the...
Attention, horseman, attention, hang horseman. On. 10-minute call for training track renovation. 10-minute call for training track renovation.
You know, she's, I don't have anywhere else to run her, or else I'd try something a little different. It's a pretty tough spot. But she's actually doing very well, and I think she'll make a good account of herself today.
Well, again, that's the San Clemente. It is race number 10 on the program. Post time for the San Clemente is 6:36 Pacific. That'll be 9:36 on the East Coast. Richard, this is the Road to the Breeders' Cup segment, and we did talk about Cotejean. You have 9 Breeders' Cup wins to your credit. When you think back on the biggest days, of course, 2003 stands out. You have told me the story of 2003 and how much that day meant to you, but... What are some of the moments in Breeders' Cup history that always stand out to Richard Mandela when you think about it?
Sorry, I just had a horse walk by I needed to look at. Hang on 1 second.
Yeah, go for it.
Hang on 1 second. Angel. I just got a nick, well, a little nick on the outside ankle there. So. Of his ankle. Sorry there. Can you ask me that again? I'm sorry to be disrupted here.
No, Richard, you're working, and I won't keep you much longer, but this segment is Road to the Breeders' Cup, and, you know, as somebody that's won 9 Breeders' Cup races, 2003 certainly stands out. But what are some of the moments when you hear the words Breeders' Cup and you think about your success? What moments and what horses stand out to you?
Oh, God, how do you separate them? I mean, every one of them did something special. To win a Breeders' Cup, you've got to do something special, so it'd be hard to pick.
Yeah,
but obviously Beholder carries a pretty strong hand there. She won 3 of them.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. You know, we followed you all through that whole run, and you were always so gracious with your time. She was such a special filly, wasn't she?
Really was. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Richard Mandela with me here going down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Richard, I know you're busy. I can hear the you just said the horses in the background. Go do your thing, and all the best with United today and with all the horses moving forward.
Thank you. This is a pleasure.
All right. Richard Mandela, the Hall of Famer. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's one thing. He's very gracious to do that. Keep in mind, it's 7:49 on the West Coast, and... he obviously was trying to do two things, do the radio interview and focus on his horses. You know, I can remember when Richard Mandela joined me on our trainer talk show years ago, and he told so many great stories. See, that was a time when I caught him, he was sitting at home, and he was very relaxed, and boy, he just told me some unbelievable stories. It was, if you get a chance, do yourself a favor. Go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and type in the search bar, type in Richard Mandela Trainer Talk, and it'll pull up. Or just go to the Trainer Talk tab and go scroll through, but you can search for it. Do yourself a favor. Listen to that program. You want to feel good about the sport, and you want to feel good about everything that this sport has to offer. Spend an hour listening to that show. And I can remember asking him what things he enjoys doing outside of racing when he's not at the barn, which of course is most of the time for you know, a horse trainer. But what things does he enjoy doing when he's not at the barn? And he paused, and in true Richard Mandela fashion, he said, nothing. Nothing. This is his life. And that's why Richard Mandela has saddled 2,000, 217 career winners. And that's why he's won 9 Breeders' Cup races. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame. And I have found that to be the case with so many of these great trainers in our sport when they're on that program with me. And if I do ask them that question, which I usually like to wrap up the show, because you'll get some interesting answers. But so many of the great trainers, the Hall of Famers that have been on that show, will give me a very similar answer. This is their life. There is, yes, they may enjoy a game of golf every now and then. They might enjoy going fishing every now and then. But for the most part, the answer you're going to get from the great trainers is, this is what I focus on. I go home, I watch replays. I spend time with my family. But I'm always thinking about the horses that are in my care. I'm always thinking about training horses. That's the vast majority of great trainers that will give you that answer. And it was so fantastic. Just a great, again, head back and listen to it. Search Richard Mandela Trainer Talk on our search bar. And you can enjoy that. By the way, the question of the day, I asked you if you could choose one jockey and one trainer to spend a full day with, who would it be? And Larry in Louisville sends in via email, Richard Mandela and Chris McCarron. Larry, I wish I had seen that while I had him on the phone. He probably would have invited you out there. That's the kind of guy that he is. But thanks for the response. Let's see some of the ones coming in on our Twitter feed. I told you, Mark Cassie and Steve Cawthon. There's Steve Cawthon, Mark Hennig. Steve Cawthon, a very popular choice. Johnny V and Todd Pletcher, there's another vote for them. And you can see why. No, great stuff. My thanks to Richard for going down the road to the Breeders' Cup, that segment presented by Breeders' Cup. Don't forget, the Breeders' Cup World Championships will be heard on radio exclusively with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'll be there all week long with our Breeders' Cup countdown lead-in shows and then the coverage of the Breeders' Cup races November 5th and 6th. 104 days, 6 hours, 56 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships returning to Old Del Mar in Southern California. I'll be back to wrap this one up right after this. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 greatest stakes winners and more lifetime grade one winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and grade one victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead, Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And two-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the grade one Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile, Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainesway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.com.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Nupravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, a busy show coming to an end. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed taking you through this 3 hours here this morning. Don't forget, there is no better way to follow breeding industry news and more with Blood Horse. You can go to bloodhorse.com. You can go to the new Blood Horse Plus, Blood Horse Daily app, and of course, Blood Horse Magazine and their social media. You can follow Blood Horse on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. No one covers thoroughbred racing, breeding, and our sport like Blood Horse. For more than 100 years, it's been Blood Horse. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to get the Blood Horse Daily right now. That's bloodhorse.com/daily. And one other quick reminder, you can go from claim to fame. You can nominate for this year's 2021 Claiming Crown at Gulfstream Park with full fields, big purses, and great betting opportunities. Go to claimingcrown.com to nominate your horse. It is the Breeders' Cup for the blue-collar horses in our sport, and what a great event it is. Claimingcrown.com is where you can register. There was one Breeders' Cup challenge race today. It was not here in the United States. It was at Ascot, the King George. And it went to Adyar, who upset Love in that one. Adyar was not a huge upset, was, I think, 2-1 on the morning line in that race. Love was 6-5 on the morning line, and a horse that looked like probably was going to win, but not today. Adyar, it was Adyar's day. And Love, I believe, finished third in that one. Double-check me on that. But I did see that Adyar got the victory in the King George and will punch a ticket to the Breeders' Cup Turf at Del Mar. All right, just a couple of minutes left. Want to thank all of our guests for making this show possible, including Gary Falter from OwnerView, Tom Law from the Saratoga Special, Nancy LaSala from the PDJF. Our unsung hero this week was Leslie Janica, the coordinator of KIMI, doing fantastic work. Naomi Tucker from Pimlico was here. Sean Clancy went in the room with Louis Saez and Kieran McLaughlin. Certainly appreciate their time. My thanks to Kurt Becker for his Stroll Through Racing History segment, and moments ago, Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela going down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure at horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and wherever you download your podcast from. My thanks to our producer, Chauncey. Sean C., filling in for Lee Delapina, doing a fantastic job this morning. Sean, appreciate it. And Sean also handling all the social media. For everybody that took time to weigh in on the poll question, certainly appreciate that and appreciate you being with me for the 3 hours this morning. I'll talk to you next week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, saying so long and go Steelers.